That's fine. I'll see you in April. Thank you.
Small Berger, Commissioner for the Investigation Correction Service. Good morning, Commissioner, but planning is Chief of Bamboo, I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Bolivia Government Organization.
Good morning, Chairperson, and further members, I'm Robert Sandra, Deputy Commissioner of Facilities.
Good morning, Chairperson, and honorable members of Portfolio Committee. My name is Sebastian Murphy, I'm the Chief Deputy Commissioner of Development and Care Correctional Services.
Good morning, Chairperson, and honorable members of Portfolio Committee. My name is Grace Monagetti, the Acting Regional Commissioner for State and Northern Cape. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Before I introduce myself, I first thing I have to say is welcome to our new Chair for the Portfolio Committee on Public Works. We look forward to working with him. And secondly, apologies from our DG, Cindy McGuire, who is also at the Constant Workshop. I'm Asha Hadden, the Chief Operations Officer in Constant.
Good morning, honorable Chairpersons of both committees and honorable members. My name is Rochelle Serra. I'm the Deputy Director General responsible for inner city regeneration.
Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members. I'm Staff of Sullivan, heading the Asset Investment Branch within the Department of Public Works. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Sylvia Mokolo, Regional Manager, Kimberly Office. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Louise Caminiato, Asset Management in Public Works.
My name is Chairperson. My name is Colin Chan, Director of the Asset Management.
Good morning, Chairperson. I'm Pierre Panda, Head of Projects, Kimberly Regional Office, Department of Public Works.
Good morning, my name is Lisa Ramiko, Public Works Team.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Adam from the Department of Public Works. I'm the President of the Department of Shields and Power Factory.
Good morning, Chairperson. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Mercedes Salalala, Asset Investment Management Branch, Public Works.
Thank you very much. Having finished with the introduction, can we hand over to the Department of Correctional Services to respond to the annual report that was tabled to the committee last week, annual report of the inspection that informed that you have distributed the document that you wanted to talk to some time.
Chairperson, thank you, and good morning to the chief and to the honourable members. Indeed, we have distributed the documents that we will be speaking to at a high level, but we have some opening remarks before we move to deal with that particular document. I think the approach that we have adopted as department is to take the inspecting judge's annual report as a key element of being able to improve service delivery within the department. The role that the inspecting judge plays in terms of being able to provide oversight gives us a very valuable input from outside the department on the way in which the department is delivering. We have noted the processes of the inspecting judge recognizing the progress that is made in various aspects, but at the same time also recognize that there are serious challenges that have been pointed to in the report, and it's that we will be focusing on in today's presentation. I think the other element for us that is also very significant about the manner in which the inspecting judge has crafted his report is the emphasis that he's placed on the location of correctional services within a criminal justice cluster, and being able to flag out some of those cluster relationships that are important for us in terms of improved delivery. What we have done as a department in terms of receiving the annual report is to develop an action plan on the findings and the recommendations of the inspecting judge. That is the document that has been made available to the Portfolio Committee, and that I will speak to at a fairly high level. We have listed each of the issues that we've extracted out of the annual report that needs to be agreed. We have identified a component within the department, the responsible budget program managers in the National Office, who would be responsible for coordinating the work to deliver on that. We have allocated a time frame for that budget program manager to develop a more detailed action plan on each of these issues. And we have also set a time frame within which we want that issue to be resolved. So you'll see that we've scheduled the 17th of December as a time period for which we will have more detailed we will have more detailed action plans on each of the issues. The time frame for addressing the issue obviously varies. Some of them are slightly longer than others, depending on the nature of the complexity. But to a large extent, we are aiming to be able to use the end of this financial year as a deadline or as a due date for delivery on these. The first issue that we have lifted up is a concern by the inspecting judge's report that the action on the inspecting judge's report is not being addressed effectively. And in particular, I think that we are not providing feedback to the inspecting judge on the action that is taken in relation to the judge's report. So we have identified that as the first area that we will need to ensure that we provide feedback to the inspecting judge on the action in relation to all of the reports that have been given and attend to the concerns in relation to the action on recommendation. The second area that we've lifted up from the inspecting judge's report is the issues around the migration of staff as a result of the OSD. And we have identified the CBC Corporate Services as needing to ensure that we manage the distribution of staff to strengthen contact capacity, our capacity at centre level, both within our centres and in the community corrections offices, and that we review the shift system, not only the 2x12, but the various different shift systems that have been put in place, so that we're able to ensure that we are able to increase the exposure of inmates to offenders to corrections and rehabilitation programs. The third element that we picked up on is the concerns raised by the inspecting judge around the unnatural and unnatural deaths, and there are a number of elements to that. The issue of dealing with officials who are implicated in assault on inmates, the issue of the investigation around death, suicide and assault, the classification of deaths and under-reporting of deaths, or ensuring that the information system of the inspecting judge and the department correlates. The issue of the proposal around the amendment of the Increase Act to ensure that these are investigated, the tracking of potential suicide cases, that we are able to have a stronger preventative approach to inmates who are at risk in that regard, and then obviously attending to the issue of the reporting and the compliance with the necessary documentation around deaths within our facilities. Those responsibilities are divided between development and care and correction. Those responsibilities lie in those two portfolios. The fourth section of the action plan deals with the identification of the 19 centres with an unacceptably high level of overcrowding. And we put that as a responsibility of CBC Corrections to be able to ensure that we look at those 19 in particular. While there are obviously others that are also overcrowded above 100%, but they are not at that high level. And then we also take on board looking at those centres in which there is a lower than 100% occupancy. The fifth area that we've identified looks at the issue of the minimum sentence legislation, the effect of long sentences, and the interconnection between long sentences, overcrowding, and activities of prison gangs, and to ensure that we're able to refine a strategy to be able to deal with that element. The sixth leg of this deals with the process of ensuring the greater inmate involvement in various programs, so that we want to mitigate levels of overcrowding by ensuring that the amount of time spent in cells is less, and I think that correlates with what the Portfolio Committee has already been saying to us of ensuring that we can enhance offender participation in activity and in labour. The seventh leg deals with the discrepancies in staffing levels. This is a fundamental part of being able to ensure that our shift systems are effective. It's obviously also part of the way in which we are managing the filling of critical vacancies to ensure that we are able to address that. I think we've also reflected to the portfolio committee that we have a task team working on more objective and more useful staff inmate ratio systems that will take into account the complexities of our facilities. So that would also link into that the issue 7 that we've lifted up. The efficiency of the parole board is a strong element of the inspection judge's report, and that is obviously part of our strategic plan going forward, but CDC Corrections will look at the recommendations in relation to that and ensure that we act on those elements. The establishment of uniform norms and standards for the involvement of NGOs and other role players, this element of the inspection judge's report falls between development and care and corrections, so it will be managed as a joint process because there are NGOs working within a corrections environment but also within the development and care environment. It obviously also links into our quality assurance processes in relation to the NGO. The issues of strengthening the health assessment of remand detainees is an element that will be taken up by CDC Development and Care, but obviously in consultation with the remand detention project, so that we can ensure going forward that we have addressed that in the correct manner. Issue 11 that we've lifted up is an issue for corrections to attend to, the issue of ensuring that the briefing of officials as shift changes take place in relation to inmates at risk is attended to. The 12th issue that we've lifted up is the report in relation to solitary confinement and ensuring that there is a process of heat attempts to being aware of the amendments to the Act and ensuring that goes forward. A responsibility on central services in the one thing, and that the education around the Amendment Act needs to be deepened, that CDC Corrections as well to ensure that that is addressed. The Section 13 then deals with the various different elements of the Act and the issues of compliance with it. We've listed up each of the sections. I'm not going to speak to them in detail. But again, those responsibilities lie with CDC Development and Care and Corrections. I think what needs to be emphasized in relation to this action plan is that what is identified here is the national office person who's responsible. But obviously, these cascade down to state level, so that the delivery on these issues is actually an issue in which that CDC combined with the regional commissioners would deliver on the implementation of it. The section 14 deals with the issue of the complaints, the different categories of complaints, and ensuring that we are able to look at solutions to ensuring that the complaints are resolved. I think the key element that has been flagged by the inspecting judge is that they're not managing the resolution of the complaints. So we've identified a number of different areas there that will need to be looked at. Including the addressing the infrastructural challenges, which is at the bottom of page 5, and some of those are the issues that we will be attending to or discussing further in today's presentation. Moving then to the issue 15, which is the optimal utilization of workshops, the inspection judge has identified particular challenges in relation to that, it feeds into the process that we've already been interacting with the Portfolio Committee on to ensure that we improve that capacity, and it is an issue that we have flagged in our mid-year strategic review and will be addressing more directly and strongly in our strategic plan going forward. The issue on item 16 relates to an issue of the communication to inmates, and that's an issue that's between central services and CDC Corrections. We will need to look very clearly at the educational informational communication processes to inmates so that they are able to adequately understand their rights and responsibilities in relation to DCS processes. Then there are specific issues that come up around particular centres. The pharmaceutical services and drug label be looked at by the Department of Care, the issue of the accommodation of foreign nationals as they wait for accommodation in the London will be looked at by CDC Corrections. The issue of provision of rehabilitation programs and transfer of inmates to centres that provide the requisite services will be looked at jointly by Corrections and Development and Care, and that feeds into the further work on a concept of centres of expertise that we're able to ensure that we've got focused, efficient resources being dedicated to the provision of programs to people, particularly in relation to corrections programs where they are offence related and one would be able to report. So it would that those two branches are doing in relation to that, which would feed into attending to that element of the inspecting judge's report. The filling of the position of the CEO for the inspecting judge is a corporate services responsibility, obviously in very close coordination with the inspecting judge. The Article 21, the transfer of offence to centres of provide for the requisite education and training, feeds also into that concept of centres of expertise that we're able to ensure that inmates are accommodated where the appropriate resources and services can be provided. The issue of the management of sick inmates within a hospital environment and the security provisions, that will be an issue that the CDC Corrections will look at how we can ensure that we ensure that the necessary security mechanisms are in place, but at the same time ensure that the respect for the health status of the inmate is taken into account. The issue 23 is an issue relating to the optional protocol in relation to convention against torture and other cruel, inhumane and degrading treatment. This was taken up by CDC Corrections, but I think it's very important to emphasize here that this is also a cluster issue. It's not an issue that can be dealt with by Corrections alone because it's in fact it relates to detention in limited to the detaining authority is. So it would cover police roles, it would cover a variety of different institution. The incarceration of remand detainees would be CDC Corrections addressing that within the context of our remand detention project. Obviously, they're innocent until proven guilty, but the challenge of them, how one ensures that they're involved in productive activities during the time they're incarcerated, becomes an important challenge for that project to address. The issue of the use of admission of guilt fines for minor offences, again, CDC Corrections is the lead on that, but it's a cluster issue. And finally, the issue in relation to plea bargaining, again, is an issue that needs to be addressed within the cluster. Chairperson, I've talked it through at a very high level. What we would then undertake to do is that during the time frame identified in the last column of the action plan, we will be able to provide the portfolio committee with progress reports on the delivery on these issues. We would also obviously be able to provide you with more detailed action plans during the period of your research on each of these areas. But that is the approach that we have adopted in relation to the inspecting judge's report, to take on board the concerns that have been raised in the report and to ensure that we put in place a system in which we are able to act on. The Commissioner has approved this action plan on his return from New York and he's indicated that compliance with these timelines needs to be strictly adhered to, and that is the basis on which we will be moving forward to ensure that the inspecting judge's input into this process sees improvements in our service delivery environment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Steiner, for your input. We will engage with this immediately. Let me start then by seeking clarity. You know, the action plan talks about what you intend doing and by when. But there are a few very disturbing facts that the inspection has brought to our attention. That we don't think needs a time frame. We were hoping that we'd come with answers to them, and let me give you three examples. The inspecting judge talks about a facility in Choyandex that facility that those inmates stripped themselves naked just because of the inhumane conditions in that facility. My question to you is, where are we with that matter? Are those people still in that facility? Can we get answers to that one? That's the other facility, it's still operational under the same conditions.
Chairperson, as to whether the offenders are still incarcerated in that facility, I can report to the committee that we have moved those offenders to the Dhamini. But what we are also doing is to build a facility in that environment. And the work has already started. But the fact of the matter is we have moved the offender to the adjoining facility that is next to Makhali.
All right. Let me get to the second one and then I'll open it up to members. I want to refer you, I don't know if you have the inspection judge's report. If you don't know, just a
Chairperson, before you leave that, when did that happen? When did that happen? When this statement has been issued to us, when did it happen? Was it before the inspector judge report to us or was it after? When did it happen?
Somebody respond to that, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was trying to get the full information from Mr. Van Amara. If I can be given an opportunity, we'll get that Chairperson to accept the date so that I can provide you with the real answer now. Thank you, sir.
So you're confirming to this committee that there are no inmates in that facility for staff. That's what you're confirming, so, isn't it?
Chairperson, I'm sorry, why I was concerned with Mr. Van Amrath is that I came from Bloemfontein yesterday, and what has been happening with regards to this chairperson, I'm not so sure that I needed to get the real information. And he's concerning with me now, chairperson, and we just need 2 minutes so that I can make sure we can get that.
We don't need day of the month, we just need to know it happened in July, August last year. So that's the first. Why are you confirming? That's fine. Let's get to the second one.
The question is very easy. Clear. He's asking when did it happen? Is it before the reporting was from the judge or after?
Fine, then. We'll just let him confirm and give us an answer to exactly when. You'll come back to us on the time. Is was it before or after the inspection judge submitted these reports to the department or to the minister and the deputy minister before? We gave copies to minister, deputy minister, previous and deputy minister comments. So those reports are there. That's the second point that I want to deal with, and then I'll hand over to members. Page 60 of the inspection judge's report, Ms. Simon. Items 3 and 4. If we go to item 3, it's classified as homicide and the responsible people are the officials. Halfway through that page, halfway through that paragraph, it says mass assault of inmates by officials, deceased denied adequate and timely medical treatment and investigation. Batons, tear gas used in the assault. That's the thought virus. What do? We dismiss the person. They kill the man. We dismiss him. Number 4, homicide again. Inmates and officials involved. halfway through that explanation, or from the top. Inmates involved in gang-related practice were after officials subjected deceased to continuous assault even when no threat was posed. What happened? You must answer that question, because it says here that the hearings were due to start in September this year. Now, there's two issues that I'm raising as a concern. Inmates use abusive force, kill somebody, and he gets dismissed. Why was it not time for that? He gets dismissed according to this report. He doesn't say there are any criminal charges. But the second point, that is more important. When inmates continuously assault somebody and then deny him medical treatment, why are we calling it assault and not torture? In my book, that's torture. And it links to the other one that I asked you about. Why do we put 21-year-old children in a corrugated loop with no ventilation? It's inhumane. It's probably borders on torture in my book. So there's this pattern of what happens, and we are then given a report that says it's homicide, we're given a report that sugar-coated, and I've indicated to the inspecting judge, and I'm indicating to you, Ms. Steiner, exactly this last time as well. Up to now, we get reports from the department saying it was sexual assault, when in our book, it borders on rape. So the sugarcoating of the reality in these facilities is a concern to this committee. So we'd want you to answer the question again. When were those females moved from Toyota? We want to get responses of why, when somebody is killed in a facility by a mass assault of officials, do we just need this charge and cases withdrawn and no criminal proceedings? And thirdly, what is your comment? Are these homicides or are these things bordering on torture?
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to start with the assault that led to the death of an offender who was involved in a gang fight. What normally happens, Chairperson, is that in case an offender has passed on or has died, we open an inquest, and if circumstances were such that it was an unnatural death, the case is opened by the head of the center with the South African Police Services. And it is then in the hands of the South African Police Services to institute a criminal investigation. That's the process. Now, Chairperson, as the inspecting judge has also indicated, there are cases where the cause of death is not immediately known. And what our officials have been doing was to report that as a natural death. And after information was received, it is then that the death has been seen to be an unnatural death. And I would like to quote an example of what happened.
Mr. Molitano, let's go to the specifics. Point number three. Mass assault of inmates by officials. And these are your stories, not infecting that story, as we were informed last week. These came from the department. You say that one was guilty and dismissed. What is that individual guilty of? And my reading of this thing is that he's guilty because he partook in murder. And you're saying you dismissed him, and the police must lay a charge. What is correctional services doing? Because it was in your name that it was done. It was in your facilities that it was done. It was your official that it was done. I don't understand why SAPS must open a charge of murder or of possible homicide. What has correctional service management done related to this official that was guilty, according to your disciplinary proceedings, guilty and dismissed? I'm finding it difficult to dismiss a man that killed someone. That's my difficulty.
Okay.
You are now saying to me,
yes,
you are now saying to us that theft must have laid a charge. If I understood you correctly, you said that if then a charge is laid and it's up to theft. I'm arguing that if you found him guilty, that you must pay a criminal charge. That's what I'm arguing. Is that the procedure?
Yes, yes. The head of the center, as I stated, the head of the correctional center laid a criminal charge against the official, and then thereafter the police take that process over in the hand of the police to investigate and also to then charge, depending on what the director of prosecution would be saying. But let me, for this specific matter, let me ask Mr. Smallberger to just explain that.
Thank you, David. David, I can confirm that after the incident happened, the criminal case was indeed opened by correctional services with the SAPS. While they are investigating the matter criminally, the department investigated the internal investigation continued, and based on the information, the internal investigation, a decision was taken to take action against the area commissioner, against the head of center, as well as 35 officials who were involved in that incident. And the person who was dismissed was not directly involved in the assault per se, but the person was working nicely and he did not respond to the complaint from the specific offender who died at a later stage. So the actual sitting here, the case against the bigger number of officials are continuing this week, and the case of the area commissioner was handled by the DPSTC commissioner. That was concluded during the first week of November. The verdict was not found guilty. The head of the center was in the disciplinary procedure found guilty, not of murder, but for dereliction of duty. And the fact that we dismissed the individual was not to say that will be the only penalty. That was for the disciplinary process according to our procedures. And we are still waiting the criminal procedure to continue. We are constantly following up with facts, and their investigation is continuing here. I need also to emphasize that there was initially an attack where the offender stabbed an official. But what is our concern is the response from the members of correctional services to the incident. And we were not satisfied with the action, therefore, the disciplinary procedures were instituted. Thank you, Chair.
But the second one, various officials were involved in the continuous assault where there was no threat posed by the deceased child of the case started, according to this, on the 9th of September 2010. Can you give us a status report on what has happened?
Chairperson, I don't have the status report now. Why? It's because I also see that the previous chairperson has been replaced by another one. I will revert back to the committee with the status of this case. But what I can assure the committee is that also in this matter, criminal cases have been instituted against the officials by the Department of Correctional Services who were implicated in this incident, and the due course of the law is going on. Thank you.
Finally, for my side, before I open up, Mr. Steiner, the categorization of these things as homicide, and my comment that just reading the description, there could be an argument made that these things border on torture. What would you choose to comment on it.
Chairperson, I think we need to be very clear that any situation in which an inmate dies as a result of officials abusing the use of force is completely and utterly unacceptable. I think the issue of how one categorizes them and at what stage one categorizes them when investigations are still pending is obviously part of the challenge in official documentation. But the approach of management is that the abuse of the use of force is something that is absolutely apparent to the department, to the achievements of the objectives of the department, and it is something that has been taken extremely seriously. So we would agree that it's categorized as homicide pending the completion of processes. But if in fact the processes conclude that the assault was as a result of the circumstances that this criteria is completely unacceptable within the environment and go way beyond just as murder.
Okay, so from our side, I understand. Because it says there, he was denied, after he was beaten or she was beaten up, they were denied adequate and timely medical treatment. So that is almost premeditated. After I've beaten you up, I don't do what is necessary for you to survive. And I'm saying it's in that context that this committee is perturbed by these behaviors. Can we get an answer on the Toyando matter before we open up to members and others? When did the Toyando transfer or moving out take place? If you don't have an answer, can somebody go out of the room, make a phone call, and give us an answer before we conclude our business? Let's open it up to members for Mr. Kekana, you'll be the first one. Gwenya, you'll be number two. Let me just put it down, there's too many. On everything, sorry. Kekana, it's Gwenya, it's Baba Nobu, Mamnyanda, Mr. Fell and Maria Abraham, and then we will see how far we are, bearing in mind that we still have the Department of Public Works and Correctional Services on another matter, so I'm asking you to be brief. Member Kefana?
The issue on training, can you just expand? What comes to mind is, do you put enough emphasis on training to rehabilitate so that, remember, these are the outlaws because of the conditions in the society of unemployment, poverty, and up in this institution. Are we in a position to say when they come there, we are successfully training so many in artisans, plumbers, so that when they go out, they are self-employed if they can be formally employed? I'm just worried that it doesn't come out as something that you put more emphasis on to stabilize our society.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think this is an area that has been raised, the issue of skills enhancement and development and training. There is a need for more emphasis on this. We want to optimally utilize the training opportunities. It obviously relates to the issue of the number of artisans that we have in our facility on budgetary constraints, but we are currently working on optimally ensuring that offenders are being provided training opportunities. There is an assessment process that we are embarking on to look at the levels of skills of the offenders and to establish at the point of admission what type of training do these offenders need. But there's also a prerequisite to a number of the training that there has to be an education that comes prior to the training. So the access to education, and you would note, Chairperson, the Minister's also made a very firm statement that it should be compulsory for offenders to attend education courses. And we are busy reviewing our policy to ensure that education will be compulsory to offenders up to the age of 25. But currently, we, in terms of our South African system, it's up to the age of 15. So we are in the process of finalizing our draft policy to make it compulsory for all offenders up to the age of 25 to attend education. So that will be a very important prerequisite to move into a skills training and development. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to clarify on the department in terms of the communication between the inspection judge. That if the inspection judge is making the report, how long are we responding to the inspection judge? I want to get that interpretation. Why I'm asking this question, when we deal with this report of inspection charge, the department was not in the meeting. And there was a question that was coming from us in terms of the report, that it is this report go to the minister. And what was the response out of this report? Because when you look at this report, okay, you'll find that in terms of the cases that have been opened, these cases is not clear that those people have been charged or the department has done something about the cases of the inmate that died in the cell or the member that has been assaulted. It is not clear. The report is telling us that the case was opened, but there was no one was charged or whatever. Two, Chairperson, in terms of the IPV, I want to know from the department that how are they communicating with the IPV? Because when you go to the oversight, we usually not see them in our meeting. And the report that we've got from them is that they are ignored by the staff at the center. Sometimes they just see us visiting the prison. No one is communicating with them that they must come to us. Because I was asking the question from them that at Limpopo, I saw one member of IPV came late when we eat lunch and we're speaking. And we found that person got lots of information that can assist us. That it showed on our last meeting that there was no communication between them and the center, that they don't take them serious, and that they have put it like that, Chair. It was shown that they don't take them serious, they don't take them as people that are going to assist, they take them like people who are harassing them, who come to monitor them on what they are doing, not to say they want to work together with them. Another ignorance that they showed to us is that when the inmate is coming from court and gets injured in the car, then they will be told that that inmate was injured outside the gate, therefore they can't help that inmate instead of taking that inmate to the hospital and get help. Thank you, Chair. Talking on the first part of the question, the issue of the feedback to the inspecting judge, we need to recognize that we have not been that effective in terms of providing feedback on the report to the inspecting judge, which is why the action plan, we've lifted that up as an issue to ensure that we can turn that around and put in place appropriate mechanisms. So I think on that we will certainly be addressing that going forward. The issue for RCB is, I think, one of the regional commissioners would probably be in the best place to speak about the nature of that relationship.
Chairperson, with regard to the relationship between our officials and the ICB, I must as well contend that the relationship is not as good as we would like it to be. There are those managers who think that ICBs are a threat and are going to report on their functioning. But there are cases where the ITV and the management is working cordially with one another, and I think the contribution that the ITVs are making is taken very seriously. Talking for the department, I would really say that we need to inculcate a culture of working together. We still have a long way to go, and we will definitely attend to that urgently from ourselves. What we have also in place is that we're going to have 6 monthly workshops with the Health of Center to discuss those urgent matters that need to be discussed. One of them is the role of the infecting judge and that of ITV, and also talking to the natural deaths and unnatural deaths, and the use of force as we're supposed to be doing that.
The point about inmates being injured in transport from the prison, I mean from the court to the prison, what happens?
Sorry, I missed that one. If an offender arrives at our facility being injured, chairperson and members of the portfolio committee, procedure is that standard procedure is that the injury needs to be noticed in that offender. On admission, we're supposed to be having a doctor as well as a nurse to examine and make an assessment of the injuries that an offender is having. Now, in this case, if the offender was then refused, it is dereliction of duty from our officials, and we need to then take that matter very seriously. There is no way that we can refuse any person wherever he got an injury, medical treatment. But, Chairperson, it is so that after the admission, there are cases where offenders have come forward to make complaints that he has not been provided with the necessary medical treatment immediately on arrival. And we're working on that as a department to make sure that at each and every admission center, there is a doctor and a qualified professional nurse to be able to make an assessment and provide the necessary medical services to injured people. But this matter, Chairperson, we will take up and provide the service to our report in that regard.
Barondo.
Chairperson, I think we must decide now. Do we have to carry on asking questions? It seems as if we are not getting the answers, as far as my assessment is concerned. I want to ask 2 questions, but my problem that I can foresee now is that we'll be delayed in public work, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe we should start with the public work and finish with them and then come back to the correctional service. Because it seems as if, Chairperson, we have to deal specifically with specific things. You see, I've got 2 specific questions that impacted on the department. And if I listen to the question that has been asked by my brother Kekana and Mama Mwenya, I don't get the idea that we are getting the answer that we deserve.
I've asked questions because 3 individuals that you recognize.
Please.
Yourself,
that's
the younger self and Abraham, and after that we can make an
offer. Okay. Right. There is a problem of 12-hour shift, which has been complained are coming out from the inspector judge. What is the department point of view on the 12-hour shift? That's the first question. The second question is the inquest. Do they do the inquest in every death that is taking place within the correctional system? Thanks.
Barbara?
On the 2012-hour shift, we as a department have been concerned that the 2x12-hour shift system does not necessarily work effectively in all correctional centres, and as from the beginning of this year we have allowed the area commissioners and the regional commissioners to adjust or define a shift system that is appropriate to a particular centre or particular management area. The factors that feed into it are staffing levels within the centres, the nature of the processes that are followed in those centres, the need for different shift systems depending on the size of the institution, and so that process has been put in place to enable the region to design shift systems that are appropriate to the objective reality of a particular management area.
What is left for us to do is to be able to do an evaluation of all of that and to then be able to determine the way forward. But certainly we would concur that the two-by-four shift system has been very effective in certain areas and has not been effective in other areas, but we haven't really put in place the mechanisms for the region to address that. On the issue of the inquest, perhaps Ms. Moody would like to address that one.
Chairperson, on the issue of the gates, post-mortems, I think this is one of the issues that was raised by the inspecting judge, that the post-mortems are not done on every gate. This is something that we are looking at. We want to see how we can move forward on this. This is an area that we really need to focus on. The whole issue of the natural gas and what is the cause of the natural gas. It's only when there is a cause for concern that the matter is taken forward. But I think the issue that we raised has been noted in terms of what is the reason for the gas. We need to obviously look more carefully on these cases to determine whether it's really the reason or was there some underlying cause to that. So we have most of that, and we are looking at it and to look at what ways and means can be engaging to ensure that going forward we don't leave in colloquial terms any stone unturned. So that's definitely an area we have to explore further.
Thank you, Chair Minister. My concern is about the manner in which type of the center report here. Reluctance of the management to deal with officials implicated in inmate death. It's simply you don't interrogate that one. You just listen, just because it's your colleague, you leave it on that day. And my concern is that poor record of death. More deaths are happening. More deaths are happening. But the reporting, it says naturally, unnaturally. I don't know whether this death done by God or whatever I can say. Why there is no relevance of reporting the death? You'll find that when you read the newspaper, it will tell you inmate hang himself at night. But why these people are not hanging themselves during the day? Why only at night? Thank you, Chairperson.
This is not, I think we have noted the concerns that the inspecting judge has raised around the recording of these very seriously. And it's certainly something that will be addressed both with the medical practitioners and in the training process and the interaction with heads of centres going forward. The issue around the nature of the deaths, I think that Ms. Moody has already indicated that we hear loudly the concerns that the portfolio committee had already raised with us and that the inspecting judge has indicated around the importance of ensuring that we interrogate the reasons for all deaths. That's part of the action plan going forward. It is a concern for us that we need to be putting greater emphasis on ensuring that we understand exactly the circumstances that have led to the deaths. So I think that is being addressed through the action plan.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Ms. Schneider has given us what she describes as a high-level response to this annual report. Personally, I would have thought that the department should have come here and given a detailed response in reaction to each one of the matters, and more particularly around those things that have been reported that are irregular or illegal, instead of simply saying, well, this is what we're going to do going forward. And you see, it seems to me, Chair, that there's a sort of defensiveness on the part of the department to this annual report. Because we've got a media statement that accompanies this action plan. But this media statement is a sanitized media statement. It's missing a paragraph. And the paragraph that was issued to the media over the weekend had a whole complaint about why the inspecting judge hadn't been to see the minister to discuss the problems, host of other things that were contained in that India statement. Now, I think you, Chair, started this process, and I'd also like to continue, because it would seem to me, if I just look at the unnatural debt, the schedule, the end of the annual report, that under item 17 on page 64, there was a suicide due to hanging, found hanged on a gate in a passage during the recreation period. That's during the day, not at night, during the day. And then they say shortage of weekend staff plan. But the next column, it says action by the department, none. I go on to item 23 on page 66. Suicide due to hanging, found hanged in a single cell during morning unlock, known psychiatric patient, treated previously for overdose of psychiatric drugs, appears monitoring inadequate. Action by the department? None. I go on to item 34 in the annual report on page 70. Suicide hanging. Found hanged in a single cell at 5:30 in the afternoon. Action by the department? None. And on page item 41 in Krugersdorp, homicide inmate cell set alight. Deceased shared a cell with two others. No officials on duty of protection. Apparently shortage of staff. Action by the department? None. Now I just want to know, when is the shortage of staff? What is the department doing about it? I mean, why is the department taking no action? Surely somebody's responsible when there's a shortage of staff.
Department?
Chief, there's nothing, it's perfectly true that the shortage of staff is something that has to be attended to, and it is an issue that, in terms of addressing the shift system, it's part of what the department is trying to address. I hear the concern in relation to the phrasing of the word none, and I think that it's an inadequacy of the way in which we've reported, because in fact all of these issues have been referred to the police for investigation, which is a procedure that needs to be followed in relation to any alleged or any suspected suicide process. But I hear completely what is being said. We will take the direction going forward and be able to provide you with a detailed response to exactly what has been done in relation to addressing all of these issues going forward. So we will lift up the specific incidents from the report and provide us with the committee with the feedback on all of those so far.
I'm sorry, no, fine. Let me just preempt what Mr. Abram is going to say, because I've worked for a long time. You know, he has said in every meeting to this department that you must understand that these are public documents. And when you bring them here, or when you sign them off, as this is what you want the public to see, you better make sure you do the thing that you're talking about. Because indeed, Mr. Abram, we have not met with you today. We wouldn't even have known that these things are in process by statute. Because as it stands here, Mr. South is very correct. It seems like there's no action taken, and therefore we can interpret it to mean that you are not too concerned about it. So I'm preempting what Mr. Abram is going to say. He's very strong on this point that when we do these things, that it's maybe not always possible, but Mr. South has brought out at least four incidences where, on the face value of the report, it is very concerning. I just think that we need to find a way as the department, as the treasury, as anybody that brings reports to Parliament, that they reflect as accurately or as closely as possible the reality that is happening in their very area.
Can I take that on board completely? I think if we look at the heading on page 59 of that table, we'll realize where the inadequacy of the reporting comes. We've got a column that says easier to reach a disciplinary decision, and we've got a column of stats NTA and calls. What is not clear from the way that the report is tabled is that none of that last column takes place without us actually having done something. But we will take that forward to impact the inspecting judge to be able to improve the way in which we report the meeting.
Chair, maybe to emphasize on what Ms. Sharma is saying, the inspecting judge is waiting independent. And this is his annual report that still that has been submitted to the president of the country as well as to our minister. In other words, this document, we only got it from the inspecting judge. We as a department have not had an opportunity to respond to the issues that the inspecting judge is raising. That's why we have committed ourselves first by having this action plan and then secondly to then go into detail to ensure that the issues that the inspecting judge is raising are addressed in full. And then, Chairperson, you're quite correct as you said that we need to sort of make sure that the communication between the department and the office of the judicial inspectorate needs to be improved on, so that by the time when these matters are put into print, already that interaction is taking place. Thank you, sir.
And I represented the judge to debate on this matter. Yeah. Last week, the inspecting judge, we asked specifically on these tables, and we were informed, and I'm looking at the inspecting judge, you must either confirm or deny it. We were informed that this particular section was pulled verbatim from the department, and it's not your interpretation. So, Mr. Moulis, whether it was communicated to the inspecting judge or not, this is what you produced, and you produced the report that says now. That is the concern that we're raising. It's not inspecting judge's interpretation of it. So all we are asking is that in future, please give us more information so that both the committee and the public in general don't sit with the impression that this department is just not reacting. Mr. Abraham.
Why don't you put it up? Especially for your psychic powers. Chairperson, you know I must be careful that I don't push my blood pressure up. And I mustn't lose my cool because I won't be able to find it again. Chairperson, you know here is a 58-page report of the inspecting judge. And, of course, this whole schedule of unnatural deaths, which is an addition. And I would say that any person that reads this report will find that a lot of effort went into it to make it as comprehensive as possible. Yet, saving on time for the reader to read, etc., etc. Chairperson, what does one get back from the department? Notwithstanding the excuse that there should be a better working arrangement between the office of the inspecting judge and the department, what we have, Chairperson, is a 7-page response. But if this response, Chairperson, was strong in content, I would say no, fine. It was a 7-page response, but there was some meat in it. There are not even bones in this effort, let alone the meat. It consists of nothing. All it says here, Chairperson, and sorry, Chairperson, I say it with all due respect, but I think people must accept that I believe in one thing, and that is, a person must be straight. And that's why I want to be straight and say the way it is. I'm not a diplomat yet. I'm just a boob. Now, Chairperson, in this response, what do you get? You get certain things here, issues to be addressed. You are told here the weak component will be responsible, and then you've heard here that the CDC corrections will look at it. This report has been in your possession from the 26th of October onwards. It's almost 1 month in 2 days' time. And in 1 month, Chair, someone is going to look at this and someone is going to look at that. It tells me one thing, Chair. And that is that there is a great deal of lethargy in that department. Like hot water, not with hot water.
who cares? And Chairperson, this is a dangerous trend. We will find that by the time our term of office ends here in 2.5-3 years' time, sir, we will have achieved nothing. We will have seen no change. We will have seen no improvement. And what I want to ask, Chairperson, is that the department should go back, that the department should respect this document and give us comprehensive responses. Not the sort of thing that I see on this document here, Jefferson. That has never happened. It says nothing. Furthermore, okay, what sort of message are we sending out, not only to the people of South Africa, but also to the international community? Because the international community is deeply interested in what happens in our country. We want to become part of BRIC. We want to become part of the international community in terms of various issues. You are judged, Chairperson, by the manner in which you do things at home before you are allowed into those clubs. This thing, Chairperson, is not a little simple domestic issue. This is a major issue. If we don't put the basic right, Chairperson, our country will not win. And we want this country to win. And Chairperson, I have one specific problem. And that is that at the Pretoria Correctional Facility, inmates have complained that those of them that do not get any visits from family who can bring them some goodies, etc., etc., have to buy food at extremely exorbitant prices at the tuck shops that are available there. Can the department, bearing in mind that these people are not earners of income, do something to see that we lighten their burden? So at least they are able to purchase some goodies. So Chairperson, I would strongly suggest that I see no point in interrogating this document because there's nothing in it to interrogate. Everything is, you know, time frame for developing an action plan, 17 December. And you, Chairperson, have announced that this is our last meeting. If I had it my way, Chairperson, I would have had a meeting after the 17th of December to find out what was the action plan. Because there will be none, Chair, I promise you. And then, Chair, time frame for addressing the issue, January to March 2011. Chairperson, there are certain issues that are mentioned here in this judicial report, which does not need a rocket scientist to address. It can be done without going into maximum problems and trouble. Why don't we do it? I thought that we would have had here something before us telling us that regarding this particular issue, this is what we've done. That we could go during the recess and go deeper ourselves in our own ways, whether it has been done or not. That doesn't happen yet, Chair. This department, Chair, must wake up. This department must come on stream. It must realize that this is the new South Africa. We want to be part of the international community. And you are like holding us back. You are chaining us so that this country cannot move forward. Let us get this thing straight, or else we will be relegated to a third world pariah correctional system, and that's what we are busy heading for if we don't arrest it now, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We meet the department on the 18th of January next year, I think, for the first time, but then we're focusing on the bill before us. And very much the rest of that season we will be focusing on the bill because we want to pass that as soon as possible. But the department does get the sentiment from the portfolio committee that we need a little bit more detail in terms of how you're going to suggest it. Because nobody's disputing the accuracy or otherwise of the report. Nobody's disputing that you're expecting that the report misses the point here or outdated there. If that then is the case, that none of us are disputing the concept of this. I think what you would need to do, but I very much despise that you've done this report on all the other outstanding matters. Is it possible for you and your department to go through the reports and give us some details? I know in your action plan you're saying it will be done by Thursday. I think what we want to get is what you think is going to be done, so that we are able to either strengthen this or to say we don't think that that is going far enough. And so on. But you did indicate that you're going to, in your defense, you did indicate that it was going to be a high level report back. But clearly, what members are now requiring is more than just a high level report back. So, is it possible that let's not interrogate it further, because it's very clear members want more meat in this report, that you come back with a report that's a bit more detailed than your high level report, and at the very earliest opportunity that we will try to slot you in so that you can suspend from this man. Not in terms of justifying the past, but members are more interested in, now that you've identified it, what are the corrective steps going forward? Is that fine?
Chairperson, it's perfectly fine. What we will undertake to do is that the detailed action plan that is developed from this, the action plan that we've given you, we will provide the committee as soon as they are done. So once they're finalized on the 17th of this thing, you will have that detail. What we will also do is to go through the individual incidents that are included in the report and provide an update of immediate action that has been taken to address those. There are issues in the inspecting judge's report that we will not be able to deal with as immediate issues because they take longer term, and we will ensure that we provide updates to the portfolio committee on a regular basis until we deal with it. So rather than perhaps producing a single dossier, we will ensure that until we have reached the end of the time frame that we've set ourselves in those action plans, we provide you with regular reports on that process. And I think in that way, that is certainly the intention that we had in developing this action plan, is to be able to hold ourselves accountable and to be able to provide feedback back to the inspecting judge on the action that has been taken. It certainly is not our intention to deal with a high-level action plan that doesn't get anywhere. It's precisely the process of ensuring that we are able to track our delivery on the recommendations and addressing the incidents that have been reported in that one, reported in the inspection judge. So we can certainly go forward in that one.
Very acceptable to the committee that we await then the action in January. Is that acceptable? Baba Jok.
Let's wait in the chapter.
All right. When the elders have spoken, then we will agree, Baba Novo and Abraham have suggested that we interact with you on this particular matter as soon as possible in the new year. We want to move over then to the business of DPW and correctional services. We have sent a letter today, I think, to both departments, reminding you of the issues that we have raised in our interaction round about September, October, and we both agreed, and I say we both, Parliament and the Department agreed that in 3 months' time we'll come back and check if there's been any progress. I'm assuming that the Department has received those letters. So that's what we want to deal with. I'm not sure who's going to present first, whether it's DPW or Correctional Services. You interact with that, and then you go on to the next one and interact with that, and then we will pronounce it.
I'd also like to say that
finally have a signed SLA with from the DCS, and we will go through that again if there are any significant changes to discuss that again. But we now have a SLA. With regard to the presentation specifically, there are four issues that we'd like to raise here in a bit more detail. One is the consequence of being fire, two, the hospital ward, three, facilities management, and the fourth one is called the cost management from the group. This is a framework presentation, but although it is a framework presentation, there is some detail in it. And we also have further details available which each one is not released to speak to. Where we don't have that, we can provide it. But we, I'm assured that we are on top of that situation. The presentation will be made by Ricky Samuel, who is our DDG responsible for a whole range of stuff, including project management in the city and professional services. But the questions will be answered by the team as well.
We're going to be responding to the issues raised in your letter, but just to repeat what the CEO has said, the draft that we made to the committee is to visit the International Service Centre almost immediately after our last meeting. Just the joint between ourselves, Public Works and Correctional Services. We went to visit the centre on the, I think, 20th of August. That was followed by a meeting with the Director General. And then we discussed in detail some of the issues that were raised at that meeting, which is what we want to report on today. So we'll be discussing the remedial work to Block K11, the addition or the proposed addition of toilets in the hospital ward, the facility management contract for surveillance equipment, as well as the issue raised by honorable members with regards to the escalated cost. To start with the remedial work, in terms of the damage or the repair work to the fire vent, the purpose today is that because of the urgency, we have to enter into a negotiated procedure. There were two reasons for that, as I mentioned already, the urgency. The other reason was to have some continuity in terms of the institutional and project memory. There are those who were working on those facilities assist us in the repair work. Because the quantity was completed on the 19th of September 2010, we handed over site to the successful contractor on the 4th of October 2010. The estimated on the cost, the pretended amount of project cost was 4.5 million rand. The time frame that we identified for the completion of this work, 3 months, which will take us to an expected completion date of the 17th of January 2011. The progress to date is 44% of the work has been completed. We thought it necessary to mention that the time left is 54%, but that's on a linear growth. So the construction industry is following on the very scope, and we can decide that the progress is satisfactory. The value of payments verified and certified today is 13.8%. Obviously, there has been other progress in terms of physical work that has been done. But we also thought it prudent to advise the members of this committee of some of the challenges. Because of the specialized nature of the facility, obviously, the security doors and the door frames are not off the shelf either. So this was placed well in advance. But we have experienced some delays. It was supposed to have been delivered. We're expecting it to be delivered hopefully before the end of the month. I'd like to say before the end of the week, but I'm trying to build in some level of comfort in terms of the delayed experience for the manufacturer. I'll move on the chairperson. With respect to the addition of the toilet to the hospital ward, this matter was discussed at great length when our Director General visited the facility. Just to remind members that what was provided was toilet as per the blueprint design. So there are toilets, communal toilets, as for the facility around. But following the visit, the oversight visit by the committee, there was a request for us to investigate providing the individual cells with toilet facilities. What we immediately then did at the meeting of the 20th of August, we got the project team together and we presented to the client three options to do this. We discussed these options at length, and there was quite a bit of debate regarding, you know, what you should do in terms of actually providing the storage and whether it should be done. But finally, what we agreed on is that the additional toilet would be placed only in the single isolation room. And that would then decrease the number of toilets to 10, as opposed to having toilets each and every room. The status now is that in terms of the preliminary estimate, we have estimated at 1.15 million rand, based on the following scope of work. At one toilet is $4,015 for the toilet. Obviously, the scope also includes additional walls, screen walls, and the necessity if you're going to construct toilets within the walls. Additional water supply lines, sewer circulation networks, including the provision for the bulk sewage construction, manholes, etc. And then what has become apparent is that there will be a need for us to provide special extractor tanks. And that obviously would include the electrical installation associated with that. And once all of this is done, noting that the hospital is granted, in fact, as new as it was being handed over, they would need extensive alteration and reparation work. Once we've dug up the concrete and laid the infrastructure, also the plaster for the ceiling, curtains, and things, that would be additional to it. And preliminaries refers to basically the normal construction overheads and associated costs. Again, we thought it prudent to discuss with you some of the challenges that we are facing. We have to, in terms of the occupational health and safety, and comply with specific standards. And there are specific requirements in terms of the purification and the extraction of the odors in the toilet. We don't want to create a new problem by providing the toilet. So we are currently in discussion with the occupational health authority in terms of the minimum requirements that would be required for us to ensure that the purification and odor extraction is achieved. Obviously, it's also specialized in the sense that you can't put conventional domestic extractor fans or any other equipment in a certain zone. They have to be tailor-made and specially designed for the particular use. Just in terms of the project, we are in discussion with the Department of Correctional Services in assessing the operational impact of the issue and also to get some sort of certification and final go ahead, take into account the various costs. Then, Honorable Chairperson and members, if I could move on to the next item that you wanted us to report on, which was the facility management contract, one for the integrated security system. At the very same meeting that I'm referring to, we had our specialists on board. In fact, we thought it absolutely necessary to get specialists from the suppliers. Because you will recall that the major issue that was raised by members was the fact that from the surveillance system that was installed, it could not clearly identify people that were involved in a particular incident. And we had been advised by the specialists that for us to achieve a level of digital clarity, one of the things is called digital clarity. But in terms of what we've done on the FM contract, The document was completed on the 20th, in November 2010. Additional surveillance cameras incorporated were put in the scope of work in the presence of the document. To best at the time, evaluation of those the site handover scheduled to be completed as from 2011. The contract validation is for a term of 3 years, this is specifically the Asian contract. And the preliminary estimate is around 11 million rand. And the contract will be funded from the PCA capital budget. With regards to the FM contract, the facility management contract for building electrical and mechanical, the appointment of the personal consultant was approved in October 2010. The FM contract scope of work document is 90% complete, so we nearly there in terms of being extended. The advertising, evaluation, adjudication, handover, the obtaining of the necessary guarantee is scheduled for April 2011. This is also a 3 year period, and the preliminary estimate for the FM contract of the building index and mechanical 60 million rand. This contract will be funded from DPW 10 hectares. And the next area that you wanted us to report on, much as we discussed at the meeting of the 18th of August, was the issue regarding to the cost analysis of the program. This is in summary. The estimate way back in 2004, which was based on the blueprint design, and also based on a desktop analysis of what the cost would be, was around 287 million. As we explained at the last meeting, this excluded the bulk earthworks, the foundation, the surface, other issues regarding to municipal expenses, as well as specialized utility installation. And all of this amounted to around 252, given us at that stage a estimate, pre-gen estimate of around 540 million. But just to break this down further into what actually has been subsequent to this, you know, a lot of it has been said about this number that has been mentioned of 280 million. We explained at the last meeting that it was really the best of study, based on a blueprint that has not been finalized at that stage. But at the time of going to tender, although our volunteer tender, the contract sum was 581 million. CPA, as explained before, that is escalation in cost, was budgeted at 91 million, and the final of CPA zero was 103 million. CPA, as we explained also, is based on the statistics provided to us by CSA with regards to the installation per building trade or building component. The contract instruction, that is variation order, 69 million, or just over 69 million for addition. And then just to repeat what we said, we decided to remeasure the entire contract. It is normal for you to remeasure a volume contract so that you have as both set of documents, as both in a volume contract, as both set of drawings. And on remeasuring, we were able to realize a saving of 76.3 million. So obviously the addition, which I can discuss very briefly in a moment, has to be offset against the savings to give you a net addition to the contract. Obviously, with the additions or variation orders and the changes that were anticipated by the commissions and the environment, there was adjustment to the provisional sum and to other items like cost of maintenance and freedom within general, so with the profit, which is the 12, 1, and 29 million respectively. And the final contract value was, or is, 8,000.
$824 million. Just to elaborate a bit on the reasons for the addition, which is more or less the $69 million. We had to sit down with the client, because the blueprint that we had, remember the blueprint that we had taken from experiences that we learned from other countries, and it had to be tailor-made to suit the South African environment in the east of South Africa, and also to suit the unit management concept that was introduced at the time. And having prepared the blueprint in an office environment, not necessarily related to any specific site at this stage, one then had to convert that blueprint to actual conditions on site, and actual conditions in the market. And after having extensive discussions with the client at the time, they necessitated changes to the final design. So the design had to be altered based on the blueprint. And that amounted to around 33.5 million grams worth of additional work. And then, as you would find in a normal building project, where you have a client who conceptualizes a need, but as time goes by, there are additions, just as we have these additions for the toilet. We have then, through consultation with the client and requests that have come through the various channels, there were requests for additional construction of additional gardens, a bakery, a textile workshop, security walkways, and the security system. And all of this has an impact also on the pre-building in general, which also is collected. I'm just giving you a summary of what those installations cost, or the reasons for the variation to the actual concept. I'm not going to go too much into this, but what this slide basically says is that the consultant's fee, obviously, what I've reported on in terms of the 824, or the 853, with the evolved person, the 824 was the construction cost for the present as it stands now. You will remember that there was a project price to this for the platform, not earthwork. And that box was $28 million. The consulting fee that we paid on this project was just over $99 million. We also reported at our last meeting with you on the board members that we normally budget around 18.5% for professional fees. That's for a full team of professional fees, all disciplines. And on the project of this nature, you will have more than one architect, more than one engineer, and more than one of multiple disciplines. And that estimate, as I said, is around 18.5, which means that the budget at the time of going out to tender or project conceptualization was around 36.3 million. We ended up paying 99.7 million, which was 11.7%. The total cost then is 932 million for the project. Jefferson, that is the presentation on what you asked us to prepare, and I thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's engage with the presentation. Just true from my side, and I'll open it up to members. More clarity on the first one. I understood you, Mr. Samuels, to be saying that a decision was taken in that meeting that we will put trailers in the isolated cells only. So that would assume that there are some cells, or let's call it dormitory, if I remember carefully when we were there at that hospital, there was that dormitory type of area that would not have a pollution facility. I'm asking for clarity, this is my understanding. And the reason we raised it as the portfolio committee was that, as it stood at the time, after lockdown, those that were in the hospital wouldn't have access to ablution facilities, as it stood at the time that we went to visit. After lockup, those that were in that ward or those wards would not have access to ablution facilities. My question is, in the areas where you've not put toilets, does that still pertain? Are there wards where after lockup, those that are in those hospital wards would not have access to ablution facilities? And if that is the case, Ms. Schneider, you have to explain to us what are you going to do about correcting that. If my understanding is correct, how are you going to do? Because at the time you said you would need a guard to stand at the door, a guard to take so-and-so to the toilet, a guard to bring it back. That was the real concern that we had at the time, and that is what we were attempting to address. So we could answer that one. And there's a second one that's more a education from my side around the cost escalation. The profit was 250,000. I thought I saw the figure somewhere over 287,000. Let's say 300,000. 300 million rand, I beg your pardon. It ended up with 900 million rand. So that's about the 600 million rand escalation. Now, the question that I'm asking, never mind even the reason for that question, what are the lessons learned? Because, Ms. Schneider, when you come to us, you, for instance, are now saying you want to build four new facilities. And you say to us, the cost of those facilities are going to be X. It is on that basis that this committee accepts or rejects or comments on it. What are the lessons learned? Because how do we now sit here and say, Daniel, that the department in presenting its estimated costs are as accurate or as close to the market possible? We accept that there was an escalation, but clearly from 300 to 900 million rand, almost a 200% escalation. 200% escalation. My question is, when the department comes, or when government comes, and says you're going to build a in San Reinsdorf or whichever one, and this is the estimated cost. What are the lessons learned that we're not going to get a situation where they're going to be escalating? Or is it just inevitable that you're going to have this type of thing? So those are the questions that I'd like you to respond to.
Thank you, Chairperson. First, I think, you know, in terms of the relationship that we have with Rational Service and our clients, we have to render service. And we render that service based on a need as identified by the particular client. So when we met on the 20th of August, we were there to present whatever solution the client needed. So we presented an option for toilet in all of the board. No resolution was taken at that meeting for us to provide help only in the escalation zone. That decision was taken after that. But as I said, Chairperson, there was a lot of debate at that time in the way the management actually was going to work in terms of operating the hospital. And there was a debate as to whether we needed or we didn't need it. So my quick response to you is that as a department, we know our construction property management better than we know the other environment. So if it makes sense for the client to have toilets in only those cells and a communal cell, that is what we will provide. If on the other hand, there are no mechanisms in place to provide housing facilities to take people from the dormitory ward, the communal ward, to the toilet, and they want it there as well, we can provide a solution as well. So really, what we said is, I think we, in the final discussion with correctional services, we have taken a particular position with regards to the providing the toilet in the cell unidentified. But should it be necessary for that to be reviewed based on the comments we get from the members, that can be entered. But I think that my colleagues would probably have to respond to that as well.
I bet you will respond to the escalation. I wanted to just... Department of Correctional Services to respond to the first one, because that one was very challenging. Do you want to respond to that one first, and then we'll come back to this later?
Yes, could I ask Ms. von Arnold and Ms. Bonetti to respond to that one?
Thank you. I think what's more important, I think work public works and EPD spend the time and we actually visit the place, and the whole concept was developed and looking at the options that took place on the table. And the reality is, because there's a communal solution currently for the communal cell, that's 6 beds per cell. Then there's separate units with single cells that have also got a communal solution for them. So none of these cells inside have actual toilets in them, but they just have wash and waste. When we analyzed the proposal that the consultants of Public Works put forward to us, it was very clear that because of the brownfields that we have in front of us, as soon as you include a ablution block, it obscures the view into the cell and it blocks the ventilation, and it creates really a serious problem. We couldn't come up with a suitable solution there without a major construction exercise, and the cost of that was considerable. So the alternative we then looked at was to say we increase the security cameras in that area. The agreement was that there will be personnel that yourself and noted that will assist in the interim for assisting people that have to go to the toilet. But to give flexibility for management to put toilets in the single cell. And the impression at the time was that it would be basically a toilet that has to be added and the cost would be limited. So we get the benefit of the toilet there, give some flexibility around that. But it wouldn't be such a high cost. When the engagement of Public Works happened with the Department of Health, they required enclosed toilets and special ventilation requirements, what wasn't necessarily envisaged at the time. We now have increased, and it's notably 1.1, but we substantially still the cost that they are looking at to actually implement. So we think we just need to get their finalized and do the value for money exercise while we're monitoring the actual operations, currently how the impact on the current operation. Just to see, is it totally disruptive? So the question was that we monitor that part at the moment, if you can get along without having toilets in the cell and have an operational way around that, which is acceptable. Knowing it's not ideal, we would agree about that. But we noted that there's extensive cost and the disruption that will be encountered in the hospital. So we tried to find a midway, but now even that midway is a substantial cost. It amounts to just the toilet without that special extractor tank, R115,000 per toilet, which is quite substantial. That's why we're trying to be just careful in the way we spend the money and see if there's any way we can get to a position where we can manage and without all we have to afford and justify to go ahead with that.
Chairperson, if I may add, the hospital at this point in time is functional. And as my colleague has indicated, we are monitoring the situation. But what we have seen is that we need toilets in the single cells where we would use those cells, particularly for isolation, if there are offenders that have maybe some communicable diseases that may need them to be isolated. But we, looking at the cost involved with the public works, we then decided that we would start with the toilets in the single cell and we would monitor the situation at this point in time in terms of how the hospital is functioning. And we have also committed that we would provide security for those offenders that are in the hospital. Thank you.
Thank you, Ma'am. With everything except the escalations, because we haven't reported on the escalations, but we allow them to report on the escalations and then we comment on everything. Do we do that and then we allow them to comment? Do you want to just talk to my second point on what are the lessons learned?
Chairperson, I think the two pertinent points that you raised in asking a question was one of, you know, whether it is inevitable, and the other issue is the lessons learned. I think it's a bit of both, because it is inevitable that we will find that what is estimated as project conceptualization is much different to when tenders are in marketing contract is awarded. I think the first lesson that one should learn from this is that of communication. I think in the future, and it's a lesson that we have learned public works as well. When you communicate with your clients and with yourself, we should at all stage provide oversight bodies and yourself with estimates of what the total cost would be. At the time when the 287 million rand was identified as an estimate, we should have made very clear that that was an estimate based on a blueprint design. A design that has never been tested before in South Africa, and in very few parts of the world other than America. And we should also have stated that it made no provision for the bulk firms, that it made no provision for the professional firms, and that we had also followed two separate tender processes prior to making an award. So, what we explained at the last meeting, and the reason why I put up this slide, is that what we should actually have presented to you was that bigger column there. We said that for this project, it's not only the 287 million that we estimated for construction, but it's also the consultancy, the bulk earthwork, the installation, which is a contractual commitment, a contractual implication that we can't get away from. The other issue that I think we need, the lesson that we can learn from this going forward, is that we now have a blueprint design for new generation correctional centers throughout the country. We have also converted the blueprint design into as-built design. So, in theory and in practice, it shouldn't be necessary for us to incur all that cost again to do the same design. The only additional cost that one would have to incur would be the adaption of the design to the specific site in Orlando or wherever the place may be. The other thing is that I think from this project, one could very easily deduce that we could have improved the scope management process. We should try in the future on this project and other projects to anticipate certain changes, to know that we would require an additional guard-up, or to know that for this particular facility, we would want a textile factory, or an additional kitchen, or whatever the case may be, so that there will come an additional cost that gets everybody worked on because costs are escalating, because something that is needed, but not originally anticipated. So I think those three areas we will work with the clients. So when we go and engage them to construct a new correctional center in another part of the country, we take the lessons learned from this project, and we don't have to go necessarily with design everything. We can basically pay for adaptation costs or adaptation costs as well as just for the professional.
Let's open up for discussion. Paliso. And then we'll go to Naka, and we'll come to the Sassel, and then we'll go to the basket. Okay. Kaila. Thank you, sir. Kaila. Okay. Abraham. Thank you, Ms. Bonita.
Thank you, Chairperson. One is worried about this Kimberley Correctional Center. Because this facility is costing us. And this facility, I want to say that what I don't understand about the design, as we said in the previous meeting, was supposed
not a normal people, these are criminals they are talking about. The hospital design shouldn't have been had like the farm where the people are kept, toilets in the hospital. Because after lockup, the service is correct. DGS informs us that they have no staff. We are struggling with surveillance cameras of DCS correctional centers. This certificate, I don't even want to dwell and go to future designs and go to the future lessons learned, because the lessons, these lessons are very, very expensive. What I'm worried about this center, are we going to, when we are pointing out a difficulty of toilets, going to the wasted cost, when you say that the toilet in the hospital, the hospital must accept because it's a criminal, they are always looking to escape from prison. How is it going to cost as government? Person, what I'm also worried about, if we are saying that we are not happy with this 150,000 rand per toilet, is DCW going to come up with another cost, giving us another cost analysis? That's my question. Person, what I also want to know is, if they are going to alter the building again, we are going to have electricity on also. Electricity cost, because if the electricity is very expensive, we will have to again take out of the budget of DCS, because it is going to come out of the capital budget of DCS. Are we going again to have the cost analysis for electricity? Which means we will not have come to our actual mandate of rehabilitation in prison. What I don't understand, what are the current practices, this one is for DCSM, what is the hospital operation, what are the current practices now in terms of those offenders in fact? Is there security that are safeguarding these people at night, because at night these things are happening of escaping? I am worried about the building is going to be all over again, having a construction on site. And one is the thing.
Would either of you choose to respond? If I don't? It's not the DCS right to doing that. What is the current practice in terms of security after lockup?
Thank you, Chairperson. The practices at this point in time is that we're providing security 24 hours. And we are trying at this point in time to minimize the number of the offenders that are admitted into the hospital. But basically, this is just due to the number of nurses that we have in the hospital. We had advertised positions for the nurses in the hospital, and we have not been able to get the number of nurses that we had planned to get. Nurses are not in a position to accept the salaries that the Correctional Services Department is offering to them. But as I'm saying at this point in time, much as the hospital is functioning, it's not fully capacitated in terms of the number of offenders that need to be there. And yes, we are providing security on the 24-hour basis. Thank you.
I don't understand when you say you're minimizing the use of hospitals, because what you are saying is you're forcing people not to get sick. That's the first issue. The second issue is we must always look at the worst case scenario. I don't know what is the capacity of that communal ward. If it's at 100% capacity, and that is 15 or 25 inmates at one go, you are not going to be able to say, you go to toilet at 7 o'clock, you go to toilet at 8 o'clock, you can only go to practical, that's why I think Margarita asked the question. But when we ask you what is the practical situation now, let's take the worst case scenario. That place, even if we do whatever we want to do, at some point it's going to reach 100% capacity, otherwise it's just got fruitless expenditure. And when it has 100% capacity, and for everybody to have a physical escort to go to the ablution block and back, there'll be somebody that will be just doing that the whole day. How practical are these things that we are talking about? Would you care to respond to those things? Because let's not take the scenario now that we're saying, well, we're trying to minimize occupancy. Have you got a plan for that? If you don't, can you come up with a plan for that when we come back in July? Because that's the real question that you are asking. You want to answer it now, or you answer it later? Now, right?
I think in terms of capacity, the capacity of the hospital itself is not necessarily fixed. The operations are being monitored for a fixed base per hospital ward. And that can be occupied and it can be used. The challenge is, I think, is from the operation part of having enough nurses, you have mentioned before, but from a voting position, the actual capacity is there.
Chairperson, the nurses are not treated with the offender.
I like talking to each other. Those where you say there are no toilets in the ward, what is the capacity of that ward? Is it 6 beds?
Yes, 6.
How many of those 6 beds wards do you have, roughly?
Seven
times 6 is 42 people, if they were all for that. Let's look at the single cells, because those have been catered for. Those 42 inmates, as things stand now, if they want to use ablution facilities, they can't use it internally, they've got to go outside. The question that you're asking is, how are you managing that? Those 42. How are you then? If all 42 wanted to go at the same time, do you have 42 people, or do you chain all of them together? What do you do physically to get those people out? That's the question you're asking.
I think, Jefferson, I mean, there would have been only one toilet per admission block, after 6 feet itself. But it would have only, the whole 6 of them would have not been able to go at once. But the ablution, the communal ablution, is in line with the ratio that public works apply to allow for people not to have any of the national hospital where they don't have space.
Okay, that's fine. Just to answer our question, maybe just answer it, Jenny. When there are 6 people in Ward 1, at some point all those 6 people have to go to the toilet outside of Ward 1. Not at the same time, but at some point all of them need to go outside. The question we're asking is, currently what happens? Does the guy knock on the door and he goes out of the water, then he comes back, and then the next guy knocks on the door and we're just trying to understand how it works.
Can you ask the DRC to...
Could you just explain that to us? Take those, an example of 6 people in one room. How do we take them to toilet and back?
Chairperson, thank you. I really want to respond on the... to say we are trying to minimize, we are not compromising the health of the offender. We are taking them out to external hospital if they need to. And secondly, if I would respond to your question, we do have the communal payments, as we have indicated. But what is important to note in this particular aspect is that the hospital is a separate entity. And offenders are not going out to other sections. It's like it's not a law movement. It's just within the hospital. And therefore, security is not high as it would be in as you're taking offenders outside or external. It's just within the hospital. And then at this point in time, as I indicated, we are able to function with the security that we are providing within the hospital because the toilets, there are similar toilets that are situated within the hospital. But I will also come back when we meet next time to indicate to you in terms of when the hospital is fully capacitated, how do we envisage to function in the future? Thank you. But at this point in time, just as another thing, we are managing. Thank you.
We will not visit the hospital because I'm not guessing what is being said here. I'm really not guessing what is being said here, but you go visit it. Messiah, I'm hoping you understand what you're saying. Because if you, when you leave this ward, you interact either with the nurse or with somebody else out there. That is a security risk in itself. That is what we were trying to address at the time. You are not, and it's fine. We will, let's not dwell on this thing, we will go and have a visit. Even if it's an individual, we will go and visit that one. Your other question was what then? Probably so, what was your question? What? Governor of the court.
I remember was, asking whether, we had a cost of 115 million in Pretoria. Imagine that. And, it would be a cost analysis that we would provide you. Because there's some unanswered issues. You say that that excludes the provision for the specialized extraction tax. And you will see it corresponds with the one of the slides in CCS presentation, where the research of the cost could be escalating to about 3 million, not 1.15 million. So naturally, those are estimates. And before one actually goes out to tender, I think, given the interest that the committee has shown in this particular matter, one investor comes back and says, these are the extra costs, because you go to the market, and the market will then determine actually what the final cost is going to be.
It's fine. Mr. Zaka?
Thank you, Secretary. My interest and shock capacity was around this toilet wall. I think it's a disaster. It's the price of the house, I'm telling you. You know, as South Africans, we cannot afford to build these expensive toilets. It's an American style. We are not rich in this country. So, Chairperson, what I would like to know, we can wait for those cost analysis, but they are not going to solve the problem. The damage has been done already. How did you get to that right? Why do we have to do that thing with taxpayers' money? It's a disgrace. You know, it's an embarrassment. It's embarrassing us. We are just doing what we are. We are not serious. I don't know whether I can say it's a carelessness or what. But interesting, what I would suggest, those who are responsible for those tenders must come and answer. They must come and clarify whatever. No, it can't be like that. That doesn't, a toilet, one toilet, I'm sure it has wheels and wheels. I don't understand it. And also, we are tired, Professor, of this big thing. We need to investigate thoroughly the whole thing of that human has costed us a lot, Professor. We cannot even explain outside that one single thing or a window or a door frame, maybe a door frame. It's 50,000. We cannot afford that. We need to have the investigators to come and investigate or to go and investigate that. Those who are responsible for the tenant must come and answer the question. Not the whole human, what, or the whole, there are people who are assigned for that. Thank you.
Thank you, that was a comment more than a question. We will take that one up as we go along. Mr. Patel?
Thank you, Chair. One of the aspects that I asked about in the meeting that we had on the 18th of August was the question of underperforming contractors, and specifically subcontractors who haven't fulfilled the requirements of the things that they were contracted to do. And one of these was the catering contract, the person who was the company that was contracted to lay cabling for the computers and the internal telephone. Now, in terms of the slide that the DCS involved was going to display, they say here that the NPDW to report on underperforming construction service providers. Now, I would like to know, were any subcontractors underperforming? If so, what are they? And what has been done to recover any money that's been paid for them? The second thing deals with the statement that was made here today about security in the hospital section itself. And I seek under correction, but I think I'm correct in saying that there have been two incidents in Kimberley's history, brief history, where the security of nurses has been compromised due to incidents in the hospital section. Yet we are told that there is security for the nurses on 24-hour basis. Can the department please comment on that? Thank you.
Yep. One from DCS, one from DPW, everyone to go first. Underperforming contractors? Yes?
I think the confusion has come to the one bullet point in the DCS presentation. At the last meeting, what was discussed was the inferior work that was done of cabling contractors. So we have nothing to report on subcontractors underperforming.
Get DCS to respond to that, DCS, you understand the stuff, but it's a point that we raised. I mean, the cabling in that facility was atrocious. If you could respond to that and also to the security of nurses.
Mr. Von Amherst will respond to on the article from consultants and the working area.
Thank you. The IT installation was managed by DCS IT chief director. And I think the reference there was any subcontractor that public works were considering underperforming, they need to report on that. What from public works side, from DCS side, the supplied me with the report now, in which they confirmed that the contractor that was installing the monitor in Kimberley at Kimberley, and they were contracted to repair the equipment installation. Similarly, there was installation done on the car by Telco, the different colors on the cabinet, which were also in the process to be rectified. So they named the subcontractor. The subcontractor that did the IT phone switches and digital media system was Dimension Data on the IT side. But the actual contractor may be underperforming was the CD.
What is the cost paid to Tesla then? And what are the costs then recovered for? Is the department now satisfied that every item of that contract has now been completed to the satisfaction of the department with no additional cost?
They're still in process of finalizing that. So the detail of the promotion will need to come back to you on the actual final deal. But they're not paying extra money to rectify that, it comes from the pocket of the contract.
So are you saying they're still in the process of rectifying the mistakes they made? Or are we still in the process of calculating the cost? Bearing in mind we went there around about May this year. We had a meeting with the department around about August this year. We are now in December this year. Are you saying those tables are still as they were when we went in May or June, or has that been done?
No, they have reported that this has been addressed, that the telecom installation
repair work, the restore work to be completed.
Estimated date of completion for that one.
Unfortunately, I have not
received that. It's almost a year. Please give us that estimated date, because clearly, if we pay for it up front, and it's poor workmanship, then we need to put pressure on those that are there. A disservice to the state. Okay.
If I can just add on the security part of the hospital, what was done initially is there was additional camera put in all passage lanes in the campus. So all the observations that were continually under observation, any security person had to take out the offended patient to the toilet. Also the housing unit, even if you got out of the staff, you still within the confines. That's like any offender comes out into an area, you still actually just outside the cell, not outside the unit. So you still confined to the unit outside security. And I just wanted to convey that statement, that obviously the security of the nurses
thank you, Chairperson. I think as my colleague has indicated, the department in terms of providing security for offenders to ensure that offenders are safe, officials are safe, and also those service providers that are coming to the hospital are safe as well. And yes, we will ensure that there is security, sufficient security for them. Thank you.
Just to emphasize what we are saying. The surveillance cameras can't pick up if it's vintage or changed because they were not that sharp. That's what we pick up. We all have yellow suits or orange suits. So these individuals can make contact with nurses that are sitting there at the kitchen area. So even if the camera is there, it's really not a deterrent at this point in time because I can still get to my intended victim and harm or hold them hostage, especially Kimberly that has history of hostages and so on. But that is the message that we are sending. We know that they're not going out of the facility. That's not the point. The point is within that precinct, we need to improve it. And that is why we insisted in hospital wards having toilets inside, so that you don't make contact with potential victims or hostage takers. That was the underlying reason why we did that. So cameras being there in themselves, I don't think it's just us, because we can't identify the difference between Vincent and John as they stand right now. Do you want to talk to that matter of number one?
Yes, Jefferson. To add on what colleagues have said, I think the House must take note of the fact that after the incidents that have taken place in Kimberley, we have appointed the new management there that has looked into the operations procedures and manual. And the security of all officials working there, as well as that of offenders, has now been taken to a higher level. The two incidents that Mr. Self is talking about, Chairperson, are incidents that took place in the housing unit. What happens is nurses will then go to a unit and give medication there, and then go back to the hospital. And those incidents happen there in the unit. So what we're trying to say is that as nurses and all officials go into the unit, they also need to be provided with escort and as well as ensuring that whenever an official sees an offender, he's also in the company of another official, which was not the case when we started that facility. And hence the incident that has taken place was as a result of a lapse in our own security, but also in the vigilance of our own officials. And we have taken stock of that, and the remedial steps now have been put in place. I do not say that things can't happen there, but what I'm saying is we have taken the security of that entire facility at least to a high level now, and everybody is alert, and we have also integrated the staff, especially at the hospital, with the one from the opposite prison, the old Kimberley facility. So we now have officials that are able to deal with the situation that may arise because of the experience that they have. Most of the nurses and social workers at the new facility were people that were coming after appointment who did not have correctional services, a background, and an experience. Now we have coupled that and blended the officials that are working there. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Never. Yeah.
Thank you, sir. The pity that you give me now. Then you are examined and on that with booty. Shepherd in the temple, make the same that you have created. Really important person from Pakistan. You get those persons. Because what we get in the end is not right. We requested a full of quantity. That was requested at the last meeting. We requested the copy of the final account, the ZO, all those copies. Did you get those persons? So we are satisfying, going from the truth to the truth. Here on the slide 10. On top there is on the contract amount. Now the question last time was then, the escalation. Let me explain what escalation is, Jefferson. An escalation is built into your bill of quantity. In other words, it's supposed to be net 581. And escalation means that that contractor, when it goes in there, it goes with its prices. Firstly, it will price for free for so much. Then in the cost escalation, where prices of material go up. So basically then, they take from that money. And the only thing that will give you the right answer is the bill of quantity, because basically there, you've got that price ready for escalation outside the bill of quantity. So escalation is in the bill of quantity. So, this is a cutting case here. Let us get a documentation and get to the what this means. I was saying quite true. We need a justification in this case. You cannot have a contract that doubles the amount. That is literally wrong. Can you please help us and get a documentation? Or CGE, which is a government entity, which has got professionals, to assist us in this case. There is a problem here. And make a problem. And you cannot unpack this problem unless you get those documents. Which documents you do not have. Because those documents are going to tell you if the escalation amount is within that contract amount. So there's not much you can do in about the documentation. There's not much at all. That's why we need that document. And when requesting the documents, where are those documents? The bill of quantity, the price bill of quantity, the VO, the contract amount, where are those documents? Because I said the last time, and some people agree that the escalation is within that document. But why now do the escalation outside that document? Why do you do that? That is legally, that is professionally, escalation is built into the contract amount. It's a provincial amount escalation. So, please, can you get over there? There's not much can talk about, but you look at those questions, can you confuse? Then we get to this toilet.
Sorry, sir, before we do that, let's just try and see the first part of your.
Jefferson, thank you. Jefferson, can I make a request that will park what the honourable member is raising? Because I don't think that the Correctional Service Portfolio Committee has got know-how or skills on the matter that's been raised here. To say we need to identify a day at the beginning of the year, early January, for us to can deal with this matter and a presentation be done on this. And on this point, can I, because I don't want to again to raise my hand, to say Mr. Samuel, as we're talking right now, there's a construction of a prison that is taking place in my town, Samin. As you enter Samin, through my first prison, also James Finney, there's a construction that is taking place there. Can you please assure the committee that issues that are raised here and right now, there are a lot of technical issues that have been raised here. To say you assure the committee that issues that are raised are not going to happen, are not going to be raised 3-4 years down the line. Can you assure us that everything is in place? Proper consultation, proper work, proper layout has been done on this new construction. Thank you.
Continue, sir, with the second part. To the first part, the escalation, those technical stuff. DPW will talk to the portfolio committee of public work, and we will interact at this level because this meeting is undertaking us very fast. So DPW, we are outsourcing that part of the portfolio committee of public works, and they will interact with you on that one. So it's not correctional services or ourselves, but it will be between these two parties. And then we'll interact with our colleagues. Carry on, sir.
Yeah, the second part is on a slide 3, where you say the site has been added over the 4th of October. Project cost 4.5 million. Now, one would like to know, this project cost, is that the final cost of this project, except its challenges yet? And secondly, what Ryan is talking about, you say percentage of work completed is 44% against 55% left. Now, what I don't understand is the value of payment. If you got 44% percentage of work, then it should be 44%. Why is your value of payment 7.8%? What is happening? Just explain to us. Thank you.
I just want Ricky to be the only person asking questions that he gives, since there are other people involved in the conference as well.
So, is there any comment?
Thank you. Well, the member was asking about the percentage set against the project against the time lapse and the expenditure. Yes, the contractor that is busy with the remedial work is a fairly big contractor. He has got the financial backing. So the payments that are coming through are dependent on when does he require payment. We cannot force a contract to say you must submit a claim for payment because he has got the financial backing to carry on certain work. As I said, we are in the process of a second payment that is going to come through before the end of the beginning of the builder's holiday. So that is the reason why we've got such a gap between the progress and the amount paid to that on the project. Thank you.
And I just have something there. You know what you're saying might be correct. The difficulty that we have with public work is that come end of March, there is a huge amount of money that is unspent. And we get told it's because it's late building or it's committed. From our side, as legislators, that is a problem. So please do us a favor. Money that should be paid in this financial year must be paid in this financial year as far as is possible, regardless if the contractor can hold on to his invoices for as long as he can, because he's got the financial backing. Unfortunately, somebody that needs a house doesn't have a financial backing, and that money can't be used. So I hear what you're saying, but we would expect that come financial year end, as much as possible is gone, come financial year end, we don't have what we call fiscal dumping. This is going to lead us to either of those things. Either a great underspend or a lot of invoices being issued out at the end. So just bear that in mind when we go forward. Okay.
I acknowledge the concern. It was a concern of mine as well. I did have a meeting with the contractor, with my project manager last week, where I did elevate the concern. And as I said, he is in the program, the process of a fairly substantial payment that can come through. But this elevates the concern that the funding has to be spent in this financial year. Should there be any carryover, it would be limited to any challenges that might be involved in the room. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Ms. Madala?
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, my question is just similar to the former question. Especially on surveillance cameras, you know, because at the time when the correctional
spent all the events by the evening. And there's our meeting was told that the cameras were not working through. But now it's not clear how much was spent on installing those useless cameras and who was the tender then and what happened thereafter after we need some follow-up upon those useless cameras. Was it just something happened when let's go ahead? Because that was a lot of money spent on those useless surveillance cameras. So I want to know, I'm sure I would like to support Member Nomaka when she says that perhaps if they, it would be good for us to call all these people who tend that. Come and explain to us how can they take government money and yet work is not done properly. My second question is on the relationship between the two departments, because we kept on asking about the service level agreement, service level agreement, because it seems up until now the two, there's no good relationship, no good relationship between the two departments. And how far are they with this service level agreement? Because when you go through the document, you find that there are, in some centers, there are boilers which were not working, and the Department of Public Works was promised to install the electric ones because of the lifespan of the older ones. So for us to come and sit here and ask such questions always, it won't take us anywhere until such time we get a clear indication from the both departments. How far are they with this service level agreement? Thank you.
Thank you, Matala.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think in relevance to the cameras, I think our transport CTF will respond to that. The installation was commissioned and managed and specifications started by themselves. If the service providers are, I'm assuming that they will provide a response. Relevant to the service level agreement, particularly to the relationship, we do, you know, engage with the DCF regularly. We have monthly bilaterals with the DCF where various issues are discussed, etc. So that engagement does transpire. And also it's a requirement in terms of the service level agreement that these bilaterals do transpire. The service level agreement is a document that governs the relationship in the manner in which we basically execute our services and the roles and responsibilities of both parties. It doesn't go down to each and every project level, because aligned to a budget and prioritization of a project, that then gets done in terms of the service delivery standards, the timeline for a particular project, as well as in terms of the contractual agreements that we would have with the service providers. So that is how a project is managed. Now, the one thing that we did look at in terms of being part of this particular committee was some of the urgent requirements, including Rustenburg and the boilers, and that has been attended to. But I think very importantly for us to note as the state and as all of us being owners of the assets is that we constantly indicate that our maintenance budget is limited, and therefore the prioritization and where we actually basically prioritize our money to be. We have noted also in terms of the report that was tabled today, the annual report by the judicial inspection. We've also highlighted, and we're going to be looking at that, those concerns. So, yes,
that's what you mentioned. Thanks. And, you know, the last time we spoke to the National Commissioner of China, he was having the service level agreement approved by its legal people and so on. Has that been concluded? Do we have a service level agreement? So that when we go to oversight, we are able to go to the document and say, but this is your responsibility, public works, or this is your responsibility. Do we have a signed, concluded service level agreement, yes or no?
The commission has signed off a revised, amended SLA and sent it to public works. We need to obviously finalize it with them. This needs to be done. So he's addressed all the concerns and experiences we've had, and the instructions we feel is important to be done, that was concluded this week. And we are hopeful that we can then finalize it with them on accepting the amendment, addressing the concerns of the commissioner in this financial year, up in this year. So he's made his decision to suppose that to be the lead of public works according to that. If I can answer on the other.
On that one, before you answer the other one, Honourable Member of Dallas, correct. Until we have that document that governs the responsibility of ISI, we keep on talking. So we want you to send a message to both the DCs, or National Commission and DCs, that we insist that the service level agreement be signed this year. We insist on it, because unless we do that, we have no tools to oversee yourself. And we would interpret that delaying tactic to be sabotage to our oversight. So we are asking the Schreiber that that thing gets done and that we have a copy of the signed agreement, because that becomes our oversight too.
Yes,
on the surveillance,
the chief director secured the reference to the previous cameras was within financial constraints, was a tool to monitor main movement to limit the canal. The 80 cameras, I don't have the exact figures, but it's 3 to 4 times as expensive as one camera. So it's very expensive. The quote that we got is about 3 million extra for selected cameras, just in certain areas for cameras, which we often install based on concerns that have been raised. The reality around that is that that type of cameras will, because cameras is a medium classified prison, which is basically really all those regularly. So we were going to actually have to install those cameras, but as efficiently as possible in all the other facilities, and this will obviously lead to increased cost per facility. But it's important to note that the original design or specification was based on looking at cost. Another correction, I think about 400 cameras in. Which is substantial. The noting of fees, it will cost 3 times to 4 times more. And then what we have, and what we work with most of it, these security systems have a high maintenance cost. And working 10 years sometimes, you become redundant. You need to replace it. So we can't be very conscious of the life cycle cost of these facilities. And that we let on those people our chemical money on maintaining. Security facilities installation. So we try to balance all the funding, because more and more of our capital funds are going into support in short features of public works maintenance budget based on their requirements, because they're not maintaining our security facilities anymore. They're previously done so. So we are under pressure to try and balance, but the reality is on the limited cameras we're putting in, we extracted them. To be part of the maintenance contract that is told that they should have been included in March, 10th of March, that contract will be awarded. That will then be part of that, and that will amount to an extra 3 million rand on fee.
What was the cost of the cameras that were in there when we went there in May? Rasmus, I know you might not have it. How much did it cost you for those cameras? I think that's the question that you asked.
Yeah, I'm not positive. I don't have that part.
A million rand? 2 million rand?
No, no, the cameras are 400, so it could be more than that.
Yeah, well, that's a, what's the sum size? 20 million?
No, I can verify that. Yeah, that's not the bulb.
The reason we're asking that question is that, you see, if you put those original cameras that it cost us 20 million there, even before the year is over, we've got to replace them because they're not doing what they were intended to do. It's fruitless expense. Somebody must carry the can for it. It's no use saying to us to fix it up will cost us so much, so we are wary about that. That's why somebody is asking the question, let's talk about the original work that was done. 20 million rand worth of taxpayers' money to put surveillance cameras that are not doing what they are intended to do is fruitless and wasteful expenditure. That is the big concern that we are raising here. What we do afterwards has to be done because we balance the security of the inmates versus the security. That must be done. But the first question that you must answer is, how will you allow somebody to put 20 million rand? I'm using a thumb sticker. 20 million rand, and not even a year later. If that was your money, sir, I can assure you you have a lawyer today to try and get the money back. But because it's the state's money, DCS doesn't care about it. That is the concern that we have as far as Parliament. That's why I'm asking the question, what was the... And we're going to take it first. Once we know what it was, surely we're going to ask who did it and what was the punishment for that person. So we will take your concern very seriously, Mr. Duck. Those are the real issues why we are meeting with you today. It's not just about fixing up, but it's about correcting anything that went wrong and learn the lessons for tomorrow.
Chair, if I can just respond on the cost of the cabinet. We must just take into consideration it's not just the cabinet. The security installation included the electronic doors that are utilized in the facility and not the key. It includes the cameras, it includes the your fingerprint systems that are utilized for access.
We accept all that. I'm saying your invoice will say fingerprint 2, 10 rand, door 10 rand, camera 5 rand. You must be able to say to me what was the cost for the camera. And if that camera is not working, regardless of the entire system, that portion for the cameras is the problem that we have as a portfolio committee. Because we pay for it. And that is the point that we're making. We don't want to have the answer since we are just bringing it to your attention that we can't make a mistake and then fix it up later on. It's the lesson that we asked Mr. Samuel earlier on. When we go to the other 5 prisons, what is it that we have learned from this one? Part of what we must learn from this one is we rather go expensive and do it correctly, then to go cheap and have to replace it, and then after 5 years and after 10 years, replace it again. Surveillance cameras across the country, you know this, DCS. Across the country, it's our buffet. So why do we go to Kimberley and repeat the mistakes that we've made all over the country? That is the concern that we have as a portfolio committee, and that is the frustration that members are having here. Yes, sir.
I think we did that for you. Very important that we have clear direction, because as we speak, there are other projects on the road. Based on the specification of the cameras that the king is working. But we execute that is given to us. So what is required from a security point of view? A limited requirement is for motion detection cameras. Not for high definition zooming cameras that is used for full photography as well. So the reason I'm raising this now is because we need to get direction from government or from higher authority to say, let's stop with other designs of other prisons and other security installations. Let's go for higher definition as well as the country. So I think it's very important that we take hold of that.
I think you're absolutely correct. So somebody at DCW, I mean, you're not the experts. We just come here and we work on the basis of your explanation. How this thing arose is when we ask the question, why was nobody seeing what's happening in there? We ask DCS that question. Why don't you know who was guilty in K-17 or K-11
The answer was those cameras didn't give us sufficient information. DCS said that to us. So our obvious question is that if those cameras are there and they are not doing what they are doing, fix it up. So I think DCS must be able to say to you, sir, that this is the minimum standard or the minimum requirement. When we ask that question again in the future, it should not be an excuse of we were not able to. That's the reason why we asked both of you to come. Because for a very long time, DCS was blaming Public Works for everything that was not happening. And we took this initiative to have this joint meeting so that they cannot say in your absence, it's your fault. And we have no reason to doubt that. What you are saying now is assisting us in going forward now. Because for a very long time we had this argument. Why is it not done? No DCS. A task force. No DCS didn't set up. We go to DCS, they say, but it's not our responsibility. Public Works. So this is why it's important what you're saying to us. That if you are happy, Ms. Ryan, with the quality, carry on. But if you're not happy with the quality, it's better to pay to DCS so that they don't buy stuff that is going to need you to replace it tomorrow because you can't fulfill your mandate.
Just listen to the response that we will raise this issue with the National Commission. We will make sure that we have determined exactly what the specifications are that we need for cameras. I would think that cameras in different locations require different levels of specification, but we will certainly interact on that and make sure that the specifications are very clearly spelled out. So it certainly is our responsibility to say this is what we need, and then Public Works to be able to operationalize that. So we will attend to this.
Chairperson, in front of me I have a so-called explanatory document which came with these slides. It says the following. Major factors adding to the escalation of the cost, blah, blah, blah. Now I would like to know the following. It says here, price escalation in materials. Contract instructions, variation orders issued to rectify discrepancies within the generic bill of quantities and charges required and changes required by DCS. Additional payment of preliminaries due to adjust the extension of contract period. Now my question is, and Chairperson, they won't be in a position to respond today. Let them please jot this down. I've got the question here. If we don't get responses, I'll ask again when they come back. My question is, what was the contract period? Why was it necessary to extend the contract period? If we could have written responses to that. Furthermore, what were the various so-called discrepancies within the generic bill of quantities? Why were there discrepancies? Wasn't it checked out? And we want to know what the discrepancies are naturally that led to possibly the extension of the contract period. Other questions here. They say within the construction phase, shortage of metal and strike actions within the metal industry led to price increases. Question is, by what margin and when did this happen? Which particular strike contributed to the escalations in metal prices? And then, Chairperson, they say here, agreement with the generic bill of quantities resulted in variations issued to a value of 33,500,000. They say here, refer to a test schedule of variation audits. I want to say up front here, there was no test schedule here. I haven't seen it. Where is that test schedule? That is heavy. And then, Chairperson, they say here, requested scope changes and additions requested by the client to adapt to changes in legislation and operational requirements to a value of 46,250,000. Those additions required were as follows. Construction of guardhouse, construction of bakery, construction of textile workshop. What I want here, Chairperson, is I want to know how many square meters did these buildings entail, because these three buildings are basically not really security buildings. I want to know how many square meters were there. It goes further, changes to security walkways and changes to security system. Tell us exactly what changes were brought about to security walkways, why were the changes brought about, why were the original security walkways acceptable, why were they obsolete. The changes to the security system, I've heard a little bit about it. Tell us in writing exactly what precipitated the need to bring about those changes. Final one on this list, Chair. They say here additional preliminaries to the value of 29,800,000 in terms of the conditions. I would like to know which conditions are you referring to. Was in direct relation to the contractor claiming for inclement weather, material shortages, and additional work by way of variation orders. We would like to have a quantification of this. Exactly what, when, where, why, how, so that we can get to the bottom of understanding. My problem, Chairperson, is that I would like to understand why I don't understand. And I would like to be put in that position. Finally, Chairperson, I think if one looks at the final figure, just under R1 million, starting off at 591 million, ending off at just under a billion rand, sorry, Chairperson, you know, I've never seen R1 million in my lifetime. Just under R1 billion, Chairperson. What is important to note here, Chairperson, is that the consultant fees were 12%. And I want to tell this meeting, Chairperson, that this is at a time when the construction industry was not booming. The construction industry, you can look at all the newspaper reports, told you that there are problems. There were job losses in this industry. You could have got a better figure from these consultants. Now, Chairperson, I wonder whether there isn't something here, a lesson for us, in terms of the Competition Commission. They will tell you the so-called organization that they belong to, civil engineers body or whatever, that says, you know, you should charge so many percent of the contract price. It does not mean, Chairperson, that it must be that amount. There's extra work you can negotiate. You can bring the figure down. I get the impression either because it's the coffers of the state, the money of the people of this country, including the poor people, we are willing just to light out the check. We do not pay attention, Chairperson, to get value for money. And this is what this thing tells me. Now, Chairperson, there's an amount here for about 100 million, I think, for VET. 100 million. Now, were these contracts, that's the question now, were they not VET inclusive when they gave you a tender or whatever? And then, Chairperson, we heard earlier that there were only two tenders. At the time when there was a lot of construction companies looking for work, how was the advertisement placed? How did you invite tenders that you only had two tenders? I thought that it's a big government job, there would have been many. Then, Chair, this facility that was burned down, it is quoted here that the cost will be 4.9 million. Now, when we hear that these toilets, 115,000, 10 for 1,150,000, could probably escalate to 3 million, then I want to believe, Chairperson, and I have the right to believe, that 4.9 million will probably escalate more than double. Because if the toilets are going to cost more than double, that new building is going to cost that much. I would like to know how many square meters was burned down. You've been there, you've seen it. And why is it that it's going to cost that amount of money when those walls did not burn down? The walls are standing and they are solid. It is the furbishing and that sort of thing that burns down. How does that cost come out to 5 million rand. Chairperson, I rest my case, but I believe, Chairperson, let us, as our president says, work better and let us work smarter. Yes, I don't see that happening. I don't see us working towards getting the best value for money. If I want to build a house, Chairperson, for myself, of course I'm going to see to it that I save every cent that I can. I don't get that spirit that you can save every cent that we can, because this is the nation's money. Thank you very much, Chair.
Abraham, by reducing those questions into writing, I mean, there were some questions there that maybe the department won't be able to respond to, but if you can put them into writing, how many square meters of whatever the case might be. And the second part is that earlier on there was a suggestion that this matter be moved to the department, to the Portfolio Committee of Public Works, because you understand it better than some of us. Can this not also then be part of that side of abuse? Quite honestly, if it came back to us, we would sit and listen and still, Mr. Abra, not know what we don't know. We still do not know what we don't know, but there are experts next to you there. Let's ask them to assist us in this regard. So if you write the letter, Cindy would be the post person. She will post it to them, but she will respond when you respond to the department. That's on all those stuff. But if there's a general comment that you have to make on some of these issues, please go ahead and do so.
Thank you very much. I'm not going to respond to all of those issues. But I'm just worried that in the news tonight we might hear that we were calling two tender processes. It wasn't the case. What I said earlier was that there were two tender processes. We went out to tender one, and then it was stalled, and more than a day after that we went out to tender again. There weren't 15 tenders, I think, that were received. And the issue about that is all tender prices include that. No contractor may add that onto his tender once the tender is closed. But we have to report it in terms of CSMA. We have to report contract amount, we have to separate and clearly indicate what is the contract, what is the bad, what is the variation, what is the center. And then, thirdly, everything that we do in terms of, everything that we do in terms of a construction project, we do in terms of the conditions of contract. So when it comes to adjustments or claiming for extensions of time, we may only do so in terms of the contract. A contract is not entitled to extension of time for any delay that is beyond for. It's only entitled for extension of time for delay beyond the control, like inclement weather or strike, etc. All of that we will respond to when we get all formally when we get the question. The other stuff we will reveal. Sorry?
The one point was that we could have got better prices because of the economic recession. Well, the project didn't stop from the recession, but that's the actual time when the property boom. I've got trust in the boom.
Oh, right there.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, when I'm listening to my vote, department, it shows that we are not yet where we want to be. I don't get any sense in terms of us making this joint a portfolio committee, because we are not yet getting the real answer that we're starting to get. I was believing that in both departments they are going to meet and make one report that is going to give us a sense that they are working together. Chairperson, I say even to ask questions to the commissioner and the department, because this is not what I was expecting. When we asked them to come this week to give us this report. In terms of the public works on slide 3, on challenges,
I want to establish the chair on these challenges that the department is saying that delivery of cell windows and security doors and door frames is late in delivery. Captain, you don't expect such a response because you have gave them enough time in terms of this center and you are taking back. And Chairperson, another thing that I don't understand on the public way, on the slide 5, bullet, the last the second bullet, when you start at the bottom, it says preliminary estimate 16 million. My worry about this estimate is that each and every report is talking about estimate. We don't have a round figure of everything that they are doing. There's nothing that they are sure about in terms of the money that it must be spent. I think the NS Commissar is looking at the logos in the show map. Which is not like Malinga. They are estimated right from. We don't have straight figures. In terms of the correctional service, also they are saying the cost of, on the page 72, they say the cost of the damage, the estimated cost to repair K-level unit is 40,000 rand. I'm worried about Nalama estimating capacity. They don't know the figure. I've got a request to check for both departments that can they meet and gave us a clear report in terms of the Kimbas. We're with them when we go to Kimbas. They know what we want. They know what are we expecting from them. Can they go back and compile the report as we want? Not what they've done. It shows that after they leave us, they never met. They never done anything. Because all the report of the correctional is not clear in terms of certain spending of their center. I heard it on the radio. That after we have moved on, I'm sure after a month, they're about to put it in the issue. What caused that? Who's behind this? We need to get all those things, but we don't get anything. Only we get that the head of the prison was taking off. Yes, they know that they are people with their arm, because that's one of the nothing that I am doing. But what makes the center bend again? And what is the cost of that? And which side cells have been bent for the second time? Because this K-level is the one that we have seen when we go for oversight. But the second one is not here. With each and any good, what damage has been happened in that cell. I thank you, Chair.
Anybody cares to respond to GW or DCS? Yes, sir?
Thank you, Chair. Just to explain on the what the honorable member said about the estimated cost for the preliminary estimate cost. If I can just refer to that, why we call it the preliminary estimate cost? It's because we are still in the process of putting the FM contract together. And as we go through, the FM contract is a management system. So we can only envisage on what the cost will be. That's why we call it the preliminary cost. Once the bill of quantities and the scope of work is completed 100%, because we go into costing as we put the document together. Once the document is 100% complete, then we can come to a final pre-tender estimate as what it is going to be. But yes, at this moment in time, at this stage, it was 16 million. But it's really come down due to the fact that it's been put into place to see where we are. But that's a prelim due to that, that we'll come to final conclusion when we come to the conclusion.
Thank you, Jefferson. The venue that they took place was in K11, and the only mixers were then in this unit, and the damage was only on the mixers, not on the building. There was no damage to the building. And the reason for that, for offenders venue the mixers, was because they wanted to be transferred to nearer to their homes. And this matter is being addressed, not necessarily transferring offenders, but we are dealing with the matter in terms of ensuring that there is discipline in the correctional center. Thank you.
Thank you,
if you allow me, I'll really, if I could just go back to one slide on the one of the groups that the project cost analysis. I just want to give a perspective on that one that they have. If you could just go back to that one, to allow me to just, you know, to be put into the it's the one that got all the figures on. The one that said project cost analysis. That's the rear of it. I'm just looking for this one, that's fine. That's the question. Thank you. This person, I think just to give us perspective, because it's very easy to get very confused with all these figures. As was pointed out by some group, that at the time when people went out to tender, it was a very, 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 it was boom time. It was when our prices, because we set our prices against per head when we built new facilities. If you look at, like, the ground that is new completed now, which is a much, if you look at the escalation and comparable, it's come down the prices. You can see building now is actually effectively much cheaper than a while back. That's an extensive difference in price. What I wanted to point out, if you look at the bottom, because all these figures, when we started this project, which was under 4 hours ahead of DCS, so the point is, DCS approached public works, the public works approached DCS and said to us, this is the estimate, after tender, so they didn't open tender, they got the tender. The tender budget, they determined from that actual tender, public tender that we see, only for third tender, amounted to 815. That included two main things. The tender that the contractor put in, which includes the CCIT, estimated at the time, just on the period, that's already there, no expenses, and 5% unforeseen, which is not unreasonable. So that's all they had included in the budget. So when it came to us, they asked us to allocate 815 million, 5.2. The end of the day, they ended up, all indications are that end up with 824 million, which is 1% on the 5-year deviation. It says 1%. It's effectively 1% higher than the project amount. And one of the DPW feature that we communicate the actual project total budget. Right? Normally, you won't give all the details. You'll say, this is my budget amount. We know we allow 5% unforeseen, we allow the CPAC. What I've asked him also is that because of the WTC contract, our contract allowed for normal rainfall. And so you didn't have to deal with the. But now the current, the WCC doesn't allow for rainfall. Every time it rains, you need to do adjustments. Which gives a certain serious emission. Well, think, no, some of it is Mother Nature. But actually, it's just now added on. Where previously you didn't even have to report on it. So we're asking to do it. If you know it's going to rain in Sanin over a 3-year contract period, around about 3 months. It's going to rain. Don't tell us it's going to be completed after 36 months. If it's a 3-year contract, tell us it's 36 months with the expected 3 months rain that you anticipate. So let's be report correctly to public and say, this is what we project based on the best information we have. And
That's my unfortunate actually, if you look at the real figures and what was presented and what was allocated. So we allocated in 2006 $860 million. But all the detail, anybody now, I don't get the history of where the issue was very small, but after open tender was made up, according to procurement, it was received on the seat, based on the basic CCAP, the unforeseen was allowed, the separate security tender was allowed, and the fact that has to be noted separately, it amounts to 815. So there was no special, the rainfall wasn't even included yet. That was the excess. So, based on that, they exceeded the value of 1%. That's the big picture. We can drill down to all the details, and we've noted the content and nothing for good reason. But the big picture is that we formed the stock in 2006, we've allowed 850 million. And we ended up at 820 million. That's the big picture. I don't know if that's helpful, but that's just the content. There's a lot of things that happen, and we've learned a lot of lessons. And doing our best to look how it works with Resto, and the other thing in Brandstein, I can promise you, Brandstein is looking at Timberlake in a success story. Not perfect, we don't have anything like that, but I can promise you, welcome to go to Brandstein. I think it should be finished now in December, construction wise, but it's 10 times there, so we're definitely done. But just that, I just want to tell that it would be important just to give the big context of what is the action. So in future, I would like to try to work with you as the total amount that you allow, and everybody knows what are we included here? CCAC is allowed back and is allowed 5% and 15, which in terms of private sector is not unreasonable. Sometimes there's a lot of unknowns that allow them to do more. So I think that's the big picture, it is more protective. There is nothing, no, there's serious things that we have to make. So I think that just is an overall background on that. Also on the issue of meeting with public works, we did meet with public works, we sat down with them on the report before it was submitted. We've noticed that maybe with this next report that has to go in, we will be put together with public works, so it's a joint attempt. But we're going to extra miles to meet each other and to speak with one voice, not to contradict, and give the impression we are meeting on the meeting.
The time after 12 meeting, and the time was spent interrogating the report. Really, I didn't expect us to be still here because there was the that the issue that the committee requested from the two departments to say we need this. I thought maybe we'd just go through those and then just a few questions, but otherwise it looks like now what they're going on. It doesn't look like the much as the officer is saying. They did make it digitally, but they didn't do justice to the requirements of the technical. For instance, on the escalation of prices, we have requested a bill of transit. That was a request, but I don't see it coming from. There are so many things, the CPA that has gone up to 91. 25 million, unforeseen costs from whatever to 34 million. And on the point around the delivery of serving, the challenge is that there's a special manufacturing of the item. And whatever the test or whatever, they always have the effect set for whatever for the when they are broken handles and other things. I'm really surprised that they don't have it. So it takes time for this to happen. And the service
level of comment, the signing is not done yet, but according to what we were told, it could have been done before the end of 2010. But we don't get the reason why up until now. And the point about the lost master key, the order has been paid, as the suppliers, they are still waiting to deliver. I mean, the loss of the master key in the correctional center, it looks like it will be done to go out and then in general. Or the surveillance equipment that will go out on tender in general. My perception that I don't think the were taken seriously by the department. I don't know what else to do. I mean, if you request a certain information to be delivered to you, and then you bang out on the same thing that is really, it's like running around in such a, not a straightforward thing. I mean, it's a team here to present and then you start with the interrogating, I would understand. But now there are specific issues that were requested from the department to say, please bring this. Please, when you come to present, bring this and this and this and that. And up until now, we don't get the information clearly as to what is happening. I think we're going to problem. And according
Mamia and Baba Ndoku and then Kaila. I must have.
Thank you, Chapter.
Kaila and then Pani.
I think both committees here took oversight to Kimberley. We are all in Kimberley. We went to blockade jointly. K11, and when we entered there was no door. And when we asked what happened to the door, where did this inmate get hammer to break that door, we told you they were strong. So we asked how did the security came in because the door was locked. They came on top of the roof. It's how they get door. For everybody who was in that blockade level. But today, the lecturers were there, we took their rounds. There was nothing left inside there, nothing left. And when we came back from Kimberley, we asked the department was here, who broke the door? The answer we didn't get. The lecturers were all there. The second incident happened again. The very same block 11, because inmate wanted to be transferred. Methods were banned again. Same block. And I find it very strange. There were students who were inside, ladies, but they didn't get hurt by this inmate. Because the inmates who were there, they wanted to be transferred. But this time we were told it was because of the bread. And until today, we didn't get the estimate of the damage of that bread. The lecturers were burnt, beds were burnt, toilets were broken, there was no water in that block. And this is the second incident in Metasa. Then next year, when we get the report, we'll be told $3 million cost for that damage. I don't think we are fair to each other. Both departments, they must go and sit down both and deal with this issue. Next year, when we come back here, we must get a report that will tell us the truth, because it's hide and seek here.
as the chairperson was saying, when it comes to connecting that, they will tell us that it's not for the first time. I've been standing in this committee, constitutional affairs. You go to court, they will tell you about subsequent. And it's not right. We are all South Africans here. We must assist each other. And you are not doing for this committee, you are doing for yourself as a South African. Please. Thank you,
sir. What about Kayla? I think what we are
going to do is that. No, Chairperson, I've never been accounted before, but I want to be accounted today. I want us to calculate what we have got from morning, from 9 o'clock up to now. What have we achieved? That's the first question from you, Chester. Two, did you have available money for sitting here for more than 3 hours? That's the second question. The last question, the escalation of charges. Is there any escalation of charges more than 101%? Because there is an escalation of money rather than 101%. How do you take that into account? If I can get a clear on those three questions before I say goodbye to you, Chairperson, I will be very clear. Thank you, Chairperson.
You have to answer for me and all three of them. But all three of them.
No.
Okay. No. Now, on the value for money, when I thought the public works will come and not about the value for money escalation. In the future meeting, they'll come and justify to the committee. And the experts in that committee will come back and tell us whether they were satisfied with the justification. In terms of this value for money, the past 3 hours, I suppose members must make up their own mind. For me, the value for money, because if anything else, it must tell South Africans that we're serious about our chance. You can't come here and give us what you think we want to hear and not expect response from our own side. And secondly, it also gives us an insight in terms of what more needs to be done by our side in getting this thing going. I think that is the value for money. One, I don't remember what was the third one, but I'll answer it before I leave. Can we ask Mr. Gayla on the vote?
In some of the information we requested, if you remember, was from Winnie Prison, where you were collecting sewer lines and collecting ceiling. Now, we asked Public Works that they must come back to us because we believe that is a latent defect. Latent defect takes 10 years, for 10 years, inferior workmanship or inferior material. Now, the problem that I have here is that from when you were put in 2001, and now, this is the end of the year now. Now, one is not sure what the delay about, because the major contractor is putting this, because 10 years will be over next year. Why would think that the department would clear that so that it does not cost the government any money, they consider both fix that at no cost for the inferior workmanship. So what is the problem? What is happening within the department officials? That is very, very, very important. Very important. And today is today for the no answer that. So I think it's important, it's very important. Those collecting sewer lines have cost the government millions, taxpayers, money going for nothing. And yet the contractor that was bringing in, which is a major contractor, should have must go out there and go and complete that work. It is inferior work. It is very clear when your sewer line collects, there will be proper compaction. It's very clear to even a layman. So let's get that information. And quickly, before that contract period ends, the 10 years ends. And if it does not, if it then expires,
And I think we must hold the officials accountable for the government. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was another comment, and I'm sure you will assist my colleague here because she doesn't have the content as well as the oversight, so you'll assist her in terms of asking the relevant questions of the department when they come into your place or next year. Ma'am Fabrizio?
Thank you, Chairperson. I won't say that. I just want to align myself with my colleague Omar Mohamadon from Pocket Mountain. Chairperson, as you can remember that the lot of this I was told in September this is not a market case, this was an overriding case. And it was ordered it would have been solved within 2 weeks. That's what I have reported in the portfolio committee earlier. But today, again, I see it is still ordered and suppliers are being delivered. But it's 2 months back from now. And I had an individual visit. As we all know, I visited unannounced the bank. But still, this issue is not solved yet. And I'm going to visit the center again, individually, because I am in the province currently. I'm going back to the province. And this shows the seriousness of how we are not taken seriously as the portfolio committee. Because we are told lies and we are coming back and reporting lies to the portfolio committee. And after reporting lies, we are convinced on paper that what we are told is not the truth. Thank you, sir.
That, again, was not a question. I don't know if you want to respond to it, but it's a comment. We were supposed to have a presentation from Correctional Services. It is 25-1. I'm in serious danger of being asked the question, is there value for money from Wawantel? But just scanning through the very many of the things that were in this report were spoken about, except the public telephones maybe, the surveillance is spoken about. Quickly, just write down, the public service, if you want to comment, the kitchen appliances, I think management restructuring, we've heard about that during previous to this meeting. I don't know if we're going to talk to the lock key. We're going to talk to those three for us, and the rest we will pick up somewhere along the line. The lock key, if you want to talk to them, if you're going to talk to the kitchen appliances, who broke them, why were they broken, who picked them up. I think those are the kinds of questions that were raised, and the issue of inmates not having access because there were no public phones at the time of our visit. Where are we currently on those matters? But you really, you're going to give you 10 minutes, you want to wrap up.
Thank you, Jason. On the first one, the public telephone for you, we confirmed that all the installations have been finalized, that all units have public telephone that are in working order. So, according to us, that matter has fully been addressed. And it should not be any problem. On the kitchen and laundry appliances, we went to Kimberley, we went through all the concerns. And I think on the previous time we reported on various of those details, but the status quo is that all damages have been repaired. It was done by the actual, not through the public works, but through the actual repair by maintenance people at Kimberley. Some of that was also sometimes a stove that was dirty, that was clean. I think everything is reported on that detail, but the other amounts to that all the issues have been addressed and repaired by the region.
The only thing that reoccurred was the injured of the refuge Kuluru, and we consulted with Public Works because they didn't have addressed that issue, but it looks like we need Public Works input to address that to have a sustainable solution. So they will address the injured on the refuge Kuluru. So that's what is my information, that is the one that still needs to be addressed, and they are ready to put something in place to repair that to be equivalent. So that's on the kitchen and laundry appliances that are outstanding. Lockheed, I've checked with the project manager from Public Works, and as the statement is in the report that we gave, is that they have ordered, and he is expecting it to be resolved in this financial year. So he has confirmed that to me personally, and that's why we put it in the report. I understand there were some challenges around actually procuring the lost key, but Public Works giving the assurance that it will be received soon. So I trust we won't be reporting it still continuing in the next financial year, but next year it should be a great month. They do not need that assurance.
Just on that one, so that we don't all get a heart attack. You are in the process of ordering a master key, and I would assume it's because the one that you had is no longer in your possession.
Yes.
Chairperson, maybe if I could just quickly come in there. The key that was lost is not a master key. It's an overriding key that can only open a particular section, and it cannot be duplicated. But the steps
that are
yes.
So that South Africa don't go too fast, and I think somebody sitting with a master key that could go in and open all those. That was the reason why I asked. Because even here it says master key, people are understanding master key, and it should be an override key. Because otherwise people don't see thinking that somebody is in possession of a key that could open every cell. So it's fine, just for the record, it's an override key that can't be duplicated, and not like people are able to walk out of there tonight to that key, just so that everybody understands, both in our committee and those that are reporting and or listening. We've come to the end, oh no, there's two things before, could you raise your hand? There's two things before we came to the end. You need to tell us about Benin. There was a question about, can we go to bed after, I just came from my colleague who is new, saying that are some of the lessons that are being learned being implemented even now as Benin has been birthed? I think that was the question that she was raising. And then you want to know, when were those 18 to 21-year-olds moved from Triando's household to something new? You want the date, but you want to say something, sir.
Before we respond to the committee, just for the record, I would like to respond to the two members, this question. And what we did when we came to this meeting today, we obviously responded in terms of the letter of the chairperson. But what we can provide to the chairperson, we can provide you with a copy of the final account. I've got in front of me volume 1 of 40. So there's 14 volumes like this of the final account. Then we can provide to you the both of quantities. Those are a few stacks of documents with 5,000 pages. Yeah. We just want to know where can we put it, because it's in the boot of the car. So the 5,000 page document will be, obviously we couldn't make a copy of that. So the final account will reflect the tender price, and the tender price does not at tender state reflect the provision for escalation. I don't want to make that point. And then what is on the screen there is a list of all the variation orders. All the variation orders, the summary we gave you in the presentation, that we can also provide to each other.
No, you're not providing to me for stuff, I'm not going to know what to do with it. I don't know if you should be providing into public works, or public works, maybe one day we'll take a day's trip to your offices, just in terms of the volume, to go through the offices, because I'm not sure if they gave you a boot full of stuff, where are you going to put it? Maybe the clever way would be just to spend a day in your company, just to spend a day there, and as Mr. Galen then can do what he needs to do. I don't know, but that is best up to you. You have your responsibility for these young men and ladies here. Yes, sir?
Mr. Chairman, I think that there's no value in giving a 5,000 bed. There's no value in giving a 5,000 bed for the property. Nobody's going to need it. Okay. But a lot of important considerations today. And while I'm a bit shell-shocked to hear that to the committee, I don't think that's the intention. I do know that the quality of our reporting can be improved. And one of the things I've made a note about is that I do think that we need to spend more time talking about this project from inception to the center of the island. I'm doing an analytical report about what the lessons are, how we implement them, what the issues are, A and B going on. And I think that's what people are asking for. And what the note that I've done for myself is to get the department to work more closely with DCF on defining the facts. Because my understanding is, and as I said, I just joined the department in September, but my understanding is it was new. And because it's new, we also need to learn. But we're not going to learn if we report in the way that we have before. And I think that now that I have a clear idea of what the expectations of the two committees are, I'd like to go back and ask for both departments that we spend more time doing a proper report in a more coherent way.
Okay.
Any further
reports
of money?
Are we incorporating the lessons that we're learning here? Because then you can go that decision.
Yes, Danin is part of just being started, the construction of this campus. So we will definitely look, ensure that the lessons learned are definitely transferred over there. But just to give comfort, we get kind of the various different stages of design stage, get plans, get stage, etc. And we engage constantly with the plan. It is true that my counterpart said, excuse me, that the Kimberley New Generation Prison was first of its kind. There was a lot of pre-planning done, including aligning to best practice, what is out there in terms of world best practice, etc. So I just want to basically, with my final closing arguments, perhaps if you allow me to check out, is to say that I think that engaging with the slightly scale in terms of the values, there's lessons learned that we can transfer to all the projects that are going through for the future. And perhaps in the future long term, it's going to reverse a lot of mistakes. So for me, definitely the learning, I appreciate the learning, might I add. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, on the question raised by Honourable Dina, the documents that are in the boot, I don't think we can say the reason behind. What we need to do, if there are issues that we need to raise with you, we need to raise with your department. I hope honourable members will agree with me that if there's a need, we'll just visit them and get whatever we want from them. Do you agree, Honourable Member? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the Honourable Member. To report on this way, I'm low, and I'm praying that I do not upset the Portfolio Committee members. The Area Commissioner confirms that the juvenile offenders that were there were taken back to the court.
I'm sorry, Prendo, are you referring to Mataji? So, are you referring to Nataji or a separate address by them?
I'm sorry, Captain, I now don't know which one is which, but the report is from our correctional officer and area commissioner. So I don't know what name it is, but this one is where they are holding a female offender. So the report that I'm having, Captain, is that immediately after the visit by the inspection judge, the juvenile offenders were referred back to court and transferred to the police there. But now, he also indicated to us that they had they modified that place where they were holding and they have other female offenders, which is also still the store that the inspecting judge was referring them to. So we, once I was sitting here, Chairperson, I then instructed my office and that of the regional commissioner, LMN, to immediately cause that the female offenders are taken out of Toyando. They should be nearby correctional facility. If we can't take them there, the female offenders can be taken back to court so that they are then referred to our community corrections in terms of Section 52 of the Criminal Procedure Act. And it's an arrangement that is also included in the bail protocol. And why that was not done initially, I do not know. But I will be able to come back to yourself, Chairperson, and report progress in that regard. It is unacceptable that people are put in a store. And as I understand the story in a prison, Chairperson, it is a prison that does not have enough windows and it is not conducive to be holding people there or incarcerating people there. And in particular now that we are putting women there, which does not allow well for us, for ourselves, Chairperson. And I will definitely, within the course of the day, or before the end of the week, provide your office with the status.
Before you make a follow-up on Kazi, I want you to phone me. You see, we can't have a situation where it is so hot that women take their clothes off and lie there, and we say that we're going to do something about it. I need a phone call to myself on this evening. If it means I must intervene with the minister, we're going to do that. We're talking about this period of activism against women. We take all these good things. And here we have a department of government housing people where you wouldn't even house cattle. So, and that is why I said somebody is going to go out and make the phone call before I come back. Because this for us is very serious. Now, I don't know what you're going to do. I don't know when you're going to do it. But what I do know is that those women are going to be out of there. This is Toyando. This is summertime. This is torture. So you're going to give me a call by the end of the day and tell me what is your plan of action. Otherwise, it means I must intervene at the highest level. You want to say something
first? Why I'm asking whether it's Nataji or I want to be clarified, is because in Nataji there was a guillotine room. And that guillotine room was turned into a room where women were kept. I want to visit that area, that place. And we made a request that they should be removed from that room, that was in that room, it was so hot, there was no ventilation. And the stigma that was in that room, was people were guillotined there and they were dropped underground. And what was done was that the floor was sealed and offenders were kept there. That's why I wanted to know whether it's Nataji or which prison are you referring to?
Sir, listen, I can confirm to yourself that before the end of business today, I'll inform you. And also that with regard to compliance to standard procedures and methods of this department, we also look into that because there are clearly the issues of non-compliance.
To the Department of Correctional Services, thank you very much. And whilst we fight, we don't fight because it's personal. We've said that many times. We fight because you have to do it, and we have to do it. So thank you very much also to Mr. Adam and his team. Thank you very much for the interaction. We're not nasty people, Mr. Samuel. We're not the right, but we're agreement for such reasons. But we see this about the work. And to you too, so thank you very much. And to our colleagues of the side, Cindy and everybody else, the support staff, thank you very much, members of parliament. You're going to do that, Mark. Kazeni and the rest, thank you very much for presenting the team. From my side, I'm going to hand over to Umama to refine the product before we go to the next season. But we probably all will meet again in 2011.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, what I want to say, I just want to thank our colleagues for the hard work that we have done the whole of this year. To say we are doing over oversight, we are accounting to our constituency offices, and what you need to know, our officials, is that we are here to come and do our work. Our common goal here is to see service delivery. And to correctional services, we are going to face this season. Please make sure that we take care of all the offenders. Take care of them. Let's respect one another. Some went to those cells because of silly mistakes. Some went to those cells because they did not have representatives to represent them. And some were just silly mistakes and all over excitement and all that. And please, let's respect one another. The public works. Public works for South Africa to be a better place. We depend on you. When we talk about infrastructure, we are talking to you. For people to respect us as public representatives and you, it's for us to deliver. Let's respect our people. Whatever we build, take into account to say, if I build a house and a cell, will I, as the builder, or as the person who's in charge, be able to stay in this structure that I'm building? Let us have respect for our people, let us respect our country, let us put our country on the map for other countries to respect us. On that score, I'll say, let's go and have a festive, very good festive season. Let's take care, drive safely. If you drink, if you're a drinker, do it at home. And please take care of those mothers, ladies, back home. Everything is the best, thank you.
Meeting is adjourned.